Hey, let's start the show.
It's October 27th, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, as always, Norman Chan in the seat to my left. How you doing, Norm?
I'm doing all right. I had some emergency this morning.
This is a new shirt. Is this a zombie shirt?
No, it's an old shirt.
Really? I've never seen this one before.
Well, I wear stuff over.
It has a sailboat, and it says Adrift, and it's all one color.
Yes.
Usually you wear a hoodie over it.
Yes.
To Norman Chan's left, wearing what I believe is a Breaking Bad t-shirt from a season that I have yet to watch.
You're getting better.
Yeah, it's Gary Whitta. La Pollo, what does it say on the bottom?
Los Pollos Hermanos.
Hermanos.
You will get there.
Okay, I just finished season one, so okay. We can talk about that
later.
Oh, no,
I'm still behind.
It only gets better. Trust me, when you first see this in the show, that is your signal for it is now becoming totally
shit
awesome.
Is becoming real.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And Gary's left is Lloyd Case. Lloyd, how you doing?
I'm here, alive.
You're wearing a tally shirt.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Good.
I asked that already, didn't I?
Yes.
It's Thursday, so that means we are streaming the podcast live out over the internet. If you don't know Lloyd, who you may not, I pity you. Right, your life is poorer for it. But Lloyd is a frequent contributor to Tested, one of our first guests on Octobercast a few weeks ago, board game aficionado, video card nerd, you know, PC guy, Mac guy now, it seems.
Occasionally, yeah.
Video card nerd?
Video card nerd.
Lloyd is the man who knows
things. Lloyd was a video card nerd before I was a video card nerd.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So video card nerds before there were video cards even.
I think I wrote the first article about graphics cards and games that anybody ever wrote.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I remember.
What?
I mean, I'm old enough to remember, as I think all of us, except maybe Norm, but maybe Norm even gets news. I remember when discrete graphics cards first came along, when we called them 3D accelerators.
Oh, yeah.
It was all very exciting.
I remember when we had 2D
Renditions.
Accelerators.
Yes, right. I did my first. Remember the thing, ET4000?
Oh,
I mean, that was the hot chip when I first started writing.
What was the? Was it 3DFX? Were they the first guys or Voodoo?
No,
who were the first people to invent that market?
I think it was... Well,
technically it was Matrox, but you know, only in a very sort of
what happened
slightly
was
technical sense.
They added the 3D rendering features like one at a time. So in what we think of now as a 3D pipeline, there's a bunch of different stuff, and like Matrox and ATI to a lesser extent, and S3 had like texture filtering and stuff like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have any of the triangle setup or any of the stuff that actually like does Z buffer ordering or anything.
Really, only 3DFX and Rendition had that stuff.
Yeah.
When this first came along in the early 90s, because I was on PC Gamer at the time, so I remember this all happening, the idea of a discrete separate component that just did graphics, which just seemed like this crazy luxury. And now, of course, you know, we couldn't imagine doing it any other way.
Now it's built into our phones.
Yeah.
Right.
So
we needed the 3D and the 2D.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember, I know you guys remember, but the 3DFX cards, the early 3DFX cards, you actually plugged your 2D video card into the 3DFX card,
mm-hmm.
and then you had this really weird short VGA cable that did that, and then you went plug the monitor into the 3DFX card.
Right.
Before the rush.
And gaming Nirvana was having a Rendition card and a 3DFX card in your system. That was
those
Nirvana.
Were good times. Yeah, yeah. Well, and then NVIDIA came out with the Riva 128, which was really a terrible chip, at least
no,
at the beginning.
No, I love the 128.
It had its image quality problems, but it was hella fast.
It had bad
hella
drivers.
Fast.
It was great for Quake 2.
The thing about that card I remember is that I got one of those cards. And this was back before I was writing for a living or anything. And I would literally build PCs for people. And they'd say, hey, I want a gaming machine. So I would build a machine for them with the new video card. And then, you know, run benchmarks on it to see how it did.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I could kind of see how things worked. And the Reaver 128, when you fired up GL Quake, the seams between polygons were so wide on those initial set of drivers that you could literally see the gray space outside
That's
of the
right.
world.
Yes, I remember that.
Through the walls.
You know, the thing about it is the Reva 128 is the card that made D3D a valid choice.
Absolutely.
Much faster than D3D. And that was when games were still deciding you had to pick D3D or OpenGL fast.
Or don't forget, with 3DFX, you had
Glide.
To Glide.
Oh. Right. Wrappers.
Yeah,
this one, Wrappers.
The choice at that point was really more OpenGL versus Glide, and it wasn't until the NVIDIA cards came on the scene that D3D.
There's a picture going around the internet right now that is quite popular, which is just a side-by-side shot of a screenshot from Battlefield 3 next to a screenshot of Battlefield 2. And the difference in the graphics is just so astonishing. Right. It always puts me into that futurist mode where it makes me think, well, look, there's no end in sight, right? When Battlefield 4 comes along and we compare it to Battlefield 3, what the hell is Battlefield 4 going to look like?
Well, the thing that happened with well, we'll get into this later. There's a lot of news to talk about first. But yeah, I mean, when Battlefield 2 came out, it was a watershed multiplayer game because it looked amazing.
Right.
The maps were huge. The lights were really nice. All the tanks looked real. And it looks like an Atari 2600 game now.
So. Yeah, it's crazy.
Not that bad.
Well, not that bad.
I can see the
if
pixels.
It came out today, we'd be like, what is this, some indie shit? What's going on?
Hey, I like the indie shit, man.
And also remember that if the Riva 128 had not been successful, NVIDIA would just be a memory now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is actually a really good point. Because if you think about it, when the Riva 128 came out, there were, I think, 7 or 8 companies making discrete graphics cards.
Yes.
Because it was like a number 9.
Right.
And
STB.
STB and S3. Canopus. Well, no. I mean chipsets. I don't mean actually manufacturing cards.
At one point, actually, in the sort of 1995 timeframe, there are 52 announced 3D graphics accelerator chips.
Chipsets, not cards.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it was – even if you just look at the ones that came to market in 97, I guess, on the shelves at CompUSA or Fry's or wherever you were buying video cards, you could make such bad choices if you bought an S3 card instead of buying a rendition. Or even the Intel chips were better. I mean, Intel made graphics cards, and they were pretty good for a few months. Yeah.
For a very short time, yes.
Yeah.
They were good 2D cards, pair of the Voodoo 2.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so – things have changed a lot. This week, of course, let's talk about news. It's been a pretty big news week. I stayed up late on Tuesday night to watch Nokia World in London. I was here, but through the miracle of the internet, I was able to watch a video of Finnish executives standing on stage talking about their Windows Phone 7 phones.
Nokia.
That's how the Finns said
Nokia.
Nokia.
You got to say it the way when in Rome.
Yeah.
Do as the Finns do.
But we were talking about Finland.
Yes.
I had a fascinating conversation during this keynote with a reader who informed me that many people consider Finland part of Scandinavia.
Except the Finnish.
Except for the Finns. Yeah. So I don't know how that goes.
Finland's an amazing country. They've got a fantastic
history. Can we sing the song?
Finland. William Trotter, who Lloyd may remember, he used to work for PC Gamer. Yeah. He used to be our war game correspondent.
Okay,
and he was one of the true old grognards. Like, and he had an amazing career also as a novelist. He wrote amazing books about the Civil War.
Okay.
And was fascinated by the Finnish composer Sibelius, and ended up actually becoming the official speechwriter to the U.S. ambassador to Finland.
Wow.
So he had a really interesting life. And
that's a weird path from PC Gamer to official speechwriter.
A man for all seasons. And the reason why I bring it up is one of the books that he wrote that I highly recommend called A Frozen Hell, which is about the Winter War of 1939-1940, where the Russians prior to the outbreak of World War II, or really kind of like right at the beginning of it, tried to annex much of Scandinavia as basically – I'm getting Finland. My history kind of a bit
– Yeah, it's Finland actually. Because
they were worried about creating a buffer zone against Hitler, right? And they tried to invade Finland.
Right.
And the amazing thing was, I mean, the Soviet Red Army during that time was already pretty massive, even prior to the build-up to World War II. And the Finns were saying, well, we're not going to have any of that. And they basically fought kind of a guerrilla war. And the world's smallest democracy fought the Soviet Red Army to an absolute standstill for 100 days. It was one of the most amazing lopsided military victories
in all history. Basically.
You're familiar. You know this story.
Yes,
roll
yes.
dice
and
really
the
well.
Under-equipped, unarmored Finnish armies brought the Soviet army to complete.
Because it was all in the forest and it was all completely, you know, eventually the Russians learned to use this to their advantage with them. The Nazis couldn't fight in the cold.
Yeah.
You know, the Russians were just like, wait for winter. Like,
so that,
let's see
that
them
fight
then. That
was like the
then.
Practice run for
but Finland is so bloody cold. I mean, they were just doing that kind of guerrilla warfare where they were just kind of, you know, putting on skis and just, you know,
why
sniping at them from the trees and stuff.
Yeah, this
I would love to make the movie. The reason why there's been no movie made of it is that it's not an American story. It's very difficult to get Americans interested in World War II stories that aren't about Americans.
Well, especially it was also very confusing because, you know, the Finnish were the kind of the bad guys because they were on the Nazi side. technically, right. even right. though they hated Hitler just as much as anybody else because they were fighting the Russians. It was a very confused
– So they just hated everyone basically.
No, they just hated being invaded. I mean, okay.
I can see that.
Yeah. I mean it's kind of nebulous in terms of like who's even in the right here. I mean, yeah, the invaders are usually not in the right, but they were terrified of Hitler and didn't want an invasion. And they thought if we have Finland, then strategically that's very good for us.
So Finland was Russia's Poland.
Kind of. You should read the book. It's called A Frozen Hell.
I'll check it out.
By
yeah,
William Trotter.
Good.
It's a fantastic read.
I've got a giant stack of books to read right now.
Yeah, and that's the problem,
except
isn't
you
it?
Don't
Who
have
has
a
the
giant
time?
Stack of books.
No.
You don't have any
pile
stack.
Of books.
I got to work all the way. I'm still way behind on Game of Thrones. I'm still only on the second book. I still haven't read the second Kingkiller book, which I've had for ages.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Patrick Rothfuss is fantastic.
While we're pimping World War II books, though, yeah. before we get any further, I want to pimp one.
Okay.
It's called Seven Roads to Hell.
Okay.
And it's about the 101st Airborne at Bastogne.
Okay.
Bastogne. Oh.
Yes. During the Battle of Bulge.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's told individual stories about the individual soldiers, not about the whole battle or anything. And some of the stuff they do is just phenomenally crazy.
So is I've read a bunch of the Ambrose books about
it's episode
about
seven
that.
Of Band of Brothers.
It's one of the better episodes of Band of Brothers.
Okay.
If you ever doubt that war is just the most hellish environment that you would just want nothing to do with, then that episode of Band of Brothers will
I need to go back and rewatch Band of Brothers.
The trees explode all around them.
Well, it's not even the combat. It's just you're fucking freezing. There's nothing to eat. You've got to dig a hole in the ground to sleep in. It's just like who would want to live like that?
Yeah, it's the worst camping trip ever, and also people are shooting at you.
Yes.
Yeah. So should we talk about tech news?
Okay. Let's just do this is fascinating. History is – let's just talk about World War II and history.
Just do an off-topic podcast sometime. Yeah. We should try that.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing going on in tech this week, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Nokia introduced the Windows Phone 7 phones that are going to save Windows Phone 7.
Eh.
You think that's no – that's
– I thought they actually physically looked pretty good.
Wait, hold on. We're talking about technology.
Lloyd did a lovely segue to on topic.
We should talk about it because the Nokia stuff is interesting.
Yeah, so Stephen Elop, who former Microsoft executive, came to Nokia a couple of years ago, announced last February that Nokia is going to be a preferred partner for Windows Phone 7 phones. And then, of course, Samsung and HTC and everybody else that's making Windows Phone 7 phones got kind of nervous.
And this was a huge news, right? Because it was a massive strategic move for Nokia to ditch Symbian and basically attach their futures to Microsoft's, right? Because at this point now, as goes Windows Phone 7, so goes Nokia.
Well, it's interesting because Nokia, at the same time they announced the Windows Phone 7 phone, also announced some more, I guess, Symbian phones. System 6, I think? System 4? I can't remember. I don't know enough about the Nokia phones to talk intelligently about it, but they announced those and they're still pushing those into the third world, it seems like, because they had a lot of pictures of stories about people who live in how do you say it, Norm? Slums in South America?
The favelas?
Favelas, thank you.
The developing world?
The developing world.
So Symbian's not dead. It's just been marginalized?
It's over here. It's off to the side.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. You want to tell your racist story?
No, I wasn't going to tell my racist story.
Oh, you should tell your racist story.
Maybe later.
Okay. So it's actually Nokia being racist.
Yeah, the Nokia presentation was really uncomfortable because they had all these pictures of like – they like have – oh, here's a guy in I think it was Zimbabwe, but I can't remember, which isn't Zimbabwe anymore, right? And he has –
No, it's still Zimbabwe.
Is it still Zimbabwe? Anyway, he said – he needs to have two SIM cards in his phone. I was thinking, why does some dude in Africa need two SIM cards in his phone? He's like, he needs to have one for business and one for ladies. And you're like, really?
And what? Did they really say one for
the
business
implication, no,
and
they,
one
they
for
really
ladies?
Say, no, they didn't really say business and ladies, but the implication was pretty strong. And there were all these little vignettes. It was really weird. Like, I was sitting here watching this.
What you took away from that was that Nokia is making phones so that –
so that they can
kids can have can so, drug deal with one SIM card.
That was the feeling I got.
And then now, also run prostitution rings with the other one.
I didn't think the prostitution ring thing. You added
on a semi-serious note, we always talk about the high-end operating systems, the high-end phones, because that's kind of where we are. But we do forget that there is a massive, massive market in the developing world for cheaper phones that run more basic operating systems. I mean, that's a massive part of the market.
Just to make a phone call.
Apps. Well, no.
Some people just want to make a phone call.
But the interesting thing about this is that they were talking about bringing apps to these phones. A lot of these phones already have apps. So, Angry Birds has been the big announcement. So many press conferences I've seen in the last 12 months.
I'm sick of it.
These phones have Angry Birds now. They have Facebook and all the normal stuff. And they're traditional candy bar style QWERTY keyboard phones. frequently with two SIMs.
Right.
They're interesting. They're not for the U.S. market. They're not even probably for the European market.
Right. But this is the way it's going, right, is that as the technology becomes cheaper and cheaper and it becomes easier to make more sophisticated devices that – that when you think about the kind of phones that people use in the third world, like just cheap, you know, throwaway dumb phones, is that they are eventually going to be replaced burner phones.
But these
just saying.
These are tweener phones.
See,
these
that's
are
racist.
In between the feature phones and smartphones.
Isn't it true, though, that even in the U.S., the sort of what they call feature phones still outsell
90% of the market, 95% of the market.
Yeah, I was in an AT&T store this weekend because Leah was trying to get her text plan changed, and I'm looking at the 3D phone and all the crazy ones, and I get bored of looking at all of those, and I'm like, well, what's over here? And they still offer a wide variety of dumb phones and feature phones.
Is it because they're cheap? Is that why they sell
Well, because there's no data plan.
Don't need
– right.
It's the data because $25-$30 a month is a lot of money over a two-year phone contract.
Right.
And like, sometimes I look at that and think, why do I have this?
So it's everything,
use this at E3 and CES and in the car.
Everything the Kin got wrong.
Pretty much, yeah. Like the Kin could have been the world's greatest feature phone.
We're also it's hard to imagine, though, you know, to put yourself in other people's shoes because we're also addicted to data. You know, I'm checking my phone every 5 minutes. What's the latest tweet? What's the latest email? To take that away and just going back to having a regular phone, it's hard to imagine that people live like that. But I guess many do.
Well, you don't know you need a feature till you get it. You know, it's like we just got my daughter an iPhone, right? An iPhone 4, just not the S because it had these great deals on iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's her birthday, so we got her an iPhone 4, and now she's got email on it, and she checks the web, and she said earlier, when we said, let's get you an iPhone 4, she says, I never use that stuff. And,
oh, yeah.
And yeah, she's right on top of it now.
I've seen Leah do a similar transition. She had a dumb phone. She had a flip Samsung phone, and then I gave her my 3GS, and she started using it. She said, I won't really use this, and she doesn't use it for a lot of things. She doesn't really use it for email or music. Like, she doesn't use the full capacity of the phone, but for like maps and Twitter and messaging and things, and all the things that are kind of that don't work as well on basic phones, and the camera, having a really
Internet.
Good camera, and even Siri. She loves using Siri. Like, again, now if you like a couple of years ago, I think she would, you know, she was like, I don't really care. But if you tried to take it away from her now, she'd be like, hold on, I use this thing.
So that's a cross-generational thing too. My mom has long said, no, I don't need an iPhone. I don't need an iPhone. I don't need an iPhone. My father upgraded his 3GS to his 4S. And for my father, iPhone, iPad has replaced the computer for the way he uses the Internet.
But they use apps or is it just the basic functions?
He's mostly browser and email and stuff like that.
Camera.
A few apps. Yeah. And like he uses some photo sharing apps and stuff like that. She had the iPhone 3GS and it was literally night before last. She says, hey, how do I use FaceTime on this? And I said, oh, Mom, that one doesn't have FaceTime. She said, well, can I get one that has FaceTime? And I said, you've had this for 4 days. You've already gone through like three years of tech. And
no, so, anyway. Lloyd's right. Once you've had a taste.
Yeah, you get right? the first one's free, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, this is going to be borne out. Like you said, you just got the iPhone 4 for your daughter because it's so cheap now. The 3GS is even cheaper.
She's probably already looking for iPhone 5 rumors.
Well, as much as people were excited about the 4S, I think the bigger story all along was the cheaper 4 and the free 3GS is going to make massive inroads into, you know, the kind of the lower end of the market where people have not been.
The free 3GS.
I know, but I wouldn't recommend people get it. I'd say spend a bit of money and get the 4.
AT&T is the only one that has it.
Well, because there's no CDMA 3GS.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Only GSM. And it's helping them a lot.
Anyway.
It was interesting to see this story about Sprint. A lot of people have been talking about Sprint and the 4S and how much money they spent to get the phone on their network and the company's whole future is resting now on the iPhone, and how a lot of people are complaining about how the network wasn't ready. All these iPhone users piled onto it, and Sprint's getting terrible data speeds in these comparative tests. I kind of understand why they needed to do it, though. Like, again, when I was in that AT&T store at the weekend, I was in there for about 20 minutes while Leah was trying to get her text plan changed, and I seriously lost count of the number of people that walked in and asked about the iPhone. And if you're working in a Sprint store or T-Mobile or whatever, a carrier that doesn't have it, to have to keep sending potential customers across the street to the other guy because you don't have the phone they want has got to be, you know, very demoralizing.
But anyway, we were talking about Nokia.
Nokia?
Nokia.
Nokia. Yeah.
So they announced.
Is that a kind of iPhone?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
It's like the Microsoft version of the iPhone.
Oh, I see.
Let me put it in context so you can understand. It's got colors. It's got a screen and a camera. And it runs iOS for Windows.
Oh.
Yeah, they call it Windows
that's
Phone
very,
7.
That's very smart of Apple to do
that. Yeah, it's the smartest thing Apple's ever done.
To cater to the non-Apple market.
Exactly. So Nokia announced two Windows Phone 7 phones. This is as I was saying before, this is the fruit of the partnership that was announced.
This is what we've been waiting for, right? Yeah,
they said, hey, we're going to be the ones making Windows Phone 7s. Phones. We're going to make Premiere.
They're the flagship partner.
Say what you will about Symbian being a piece of garbage. The hardware has always been really nice. They do good cameras. They have good designers. Those guys make nice looking phones.
But again, if you've got a bad OS, it's all for nothing.
But the point is now they have access to a good OS.
Yes, a very good one.
Instantly that put kind of the Windows Phone 7 market in limbo because there were two things that Windows Phone was waiting on. Mango, which added multitasking and a bunch of other good features. And then the hardware from this Nokia partnership. So the hardware is announced. It's pretty good. 3.7-inch screen. AMOLED
is this the Lumia
screen.
800?
This is the Lumia 800, which is the one
otherwise known as the N9, right? This was the N9.
Very similar to the N9.
It's a similar industrial design, different guts. So screen's different.
Okay.
Screen's a little bit smaller.
Okay.
The CPU's a little bit faster and a little bit more capable. So it's a TIO map running at 1.4 gigahertz.
Single core.
Single core, not double core. I don't think Windows Phone 7 runs multi-core at this point because none of those phones have multi-core. And you know, the thing I've always said is that the specs don't matter. Let what shows up on the screen be
what you real world experience wins every time.
I want to sort of pitch in and talk about the real world experience we've had with Windows Phone 7. My wife has one.
Okay.
And she is extremely frustrated with it.
Really?
Because
does she have Mango?
Basic? No, not yet. AT&T.
Well, hold on. They should all be out now.
Well, it hasn't updated yet.
It won't zoom it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is that the gross user interface stuff is pretty clean. It's all the little stuff, once you get deep into an app, backing out is kind of a pain because you can't always back out to the same place you expect to back out to.
Well, because there's multiple trees through
that. That's right. And so she gets very confused sometimes. Wait a minute. I didn't want to be here. I wanted to be where I was a moment ago and stuff like that. So there's a lot of little things. I mean, even things like bringing up the numeric keypad when you're dialing the phone is like not as simple as it is with
I've phones. Wondered about that because, you know, you spend 5 minutes with it. The first 5 minutes, the first impressions of Windows Phone 7 are always – everyone's always delighted, right? It's colorful and vibrant and these tiles and it feels elegant and you can move around and it just seems really, really cool. But I've wondered if I had to live with one for a few weeks once you start drilling down and really using it the way that Lloyd's talking about, if you do start to find those things that are irritating.
I've done that. The thing that I find – and this may be something that iOS trained me to do is that when I need – usually my response, rather than to try to move back and forth in the app, is to reset, go to the home screen, start back from the top level, and get to where I want. But I don't find that I drill down into that many apps is the other thing. Most of the stuff I use is very surface
and
level.
And then some of the hardware UI things. This is an HTC phone. I forget which
one. Surround or the
It's the one
HTC
with
the
physical
7S.
Keyboard.
Oh, it's on T-Mobile?
No, it's on AT&T.
Okay.
At any rate, one of the things it has is so you pop the little power button to bring the screen back to life, right? Well, if you hold it for more than a second, it turns off instead.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yes, and sometimes if you just pop the button, it doesn't come alive. So it didn't come alive, so I'll hold it a little bit longer, and instead it turns off.
And then the other thing that I find weird is, I mean, Apple was pilloried, and rightly so, for not having a lot of basic features for a long time. Like, we took a while to get cut and paste. People forget that now. You know, we were wanting cut and paste for a long
year.
Time. And we only just now got customizable text tones.
And
so I want to put a customizable text tone on my phone. And I was out there in the office. I got a text, and Brad Shoemaker was like, "Oh, I love that text sound." I said, "I'll send it to you." He goes, "Oh, I'm a Windows phone. I don't think I can customize my text tones yet." And I'm like, "How is it that they're not? How did they not learn from these mistakes? They're doing all the same things that Apple did."
Well,
wrong.
the thing that Microsoft did is started with the base. Their strategy was to start with base level of functionality and iterate quickly, and then they didn't really iterate that quickly.
Yeah, the first part only really works if you do the second part.
I mean, if you look at it compared to the iPhone lifespan, then they it took three revisions, or it took the fourth version of the OS before we got multitasking on iOS. You know, they added multitasking to Windows Phone 7 9, 12 months after launch.
Do you think it would make more sense?
But they launched into a world where everybody else was multitasking. So that's the mess up there.
I want to raise this question because it just occurred to me. I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad idea, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. Right now, the way that phone operating systems get updated is that, you know, you wait a long time and there's a big update. Like, here comes iOS 5, here comes Mango, here comes Ice Cream Sandwich, and it's a whole new experience. Would it be better in any way if they kind of incrementally just like, okay, now here's cut and paste, just more frequent and smaller updates?
I mean, there were three or four updates over the first year of that phone.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that's better because then it's just multiple times for people to get frustrated and be confused.
Yeah, I think you're probably
it's
right.
It's easier to package
like big service pack type
thing.
Updates. Yeah,
yeah, and do kind of holistic changes rather than.
Plus, it, at least with Windows Phone 7, it doesn't take any less time to do a minor update than a major update. You still have to go through the 3 reboot cycles and all that kind of stuff.
What do you think of Windows Phone 7 personally from the time you've played around?
I think it needs some work. I mean, it's still rough. I mean, the way I would put it is it's kind of like Windows 3.1 right now.
How do you like – if you couldn't have an iPhone –
I think you have a bad phone too for what it's worth because the Focus was – he has the keyboard HTC phone for AT&T.
Keyboard HTC? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we did. We tested out the Surround and the Focus. Uh-huh. So the Samsung bad. Focus is the
in some ways this is a transition phone for my wife because I think the next phone she get, whatever it will be, will not have a physical keyboard.
Okay.
She'll be okay with that.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how people have transitioned away from that. I remember when the iPhone first came out, people said, "Oh, I've got to have my physical keyboard," and that seems to have fallen away as people have gotten more and more used to using the touch keyboards.
The real interesting challenge will be getting my older daughter away from her BlackBerry.
Well, as her friends start falling off BlackBerry Messenger, one of the things I've enjoyed over the last few weeks is watching Questlove tweeting about people on his BlackBerry Messenger list just disappearing.
Yeah.
So
it's also BlackBerry Messenger.
Again, it's easy to not look at the global market, though. I've been making a few comments lately about how, you know, I think BlackBerry is moribund and, you know, they're going to be out of the picture pretty soon. But you forget, like, a lot of people messaged me and said in the UK, for example, BlackBerry amongst young people is massive. Like, that's still the coolest thing. I don't know how BlackBerry ever became cool among young people, but I think it was basically BBM did it.
Well, I blame Paris Hilton.
Did she have a BlackBerry for a while?
For a long time, the BlackBerry was the celebrity phone of choice.
I remember when it was the coolest thing. The last phone that I owned before the iPhone was a BlackBerry 8870, something like that.
Easy to text.
They were the hottest things to have.
Well, it had a really
terrible phone, but I love getting push email and having a full keyboard.
Yeah, the thing about those BlackBerries especially was they were really awful phones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Nokia Lumia 800.
Flagship.
Nobody wants to talk about this. I want to talk about it.
I said
– Every time I bring it up, we change it.
I've been saying all along.
I
love Windows Phone 7. I love the OS. Like you said, I think once you drill down into it, there are some problems. But on the face of it, they've got a very interesting interface going on. It's very pretty.
One thing I do love is sort of the little animated icons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, changes pictures on the fly.
Yeah.
Well, the ambient information is really
– And there are some decent phones out there. But the minute that Nokia announced this partnership, my attitude was like – To anyone who want to get a Windows Phone 7 phone, wait to see what the Nokia stuff is because that's going to be the premier. The Nokia stuff is going to be like the equivalent of the Nexus series for Android, right? The flagship core phones.
Should be.
And the hardware does look good. I like – I mean just physical sort of industrial design appearance. I mean they look very slick.
Well, curved grill glass.
Yeah. So this new Lumia, the industrial design, this phone looks beautiful. I would say this
AMOLED.
Is the first phone that looks that
– Windows Phone. Yeah, I think the first
non-iPhone phone that I think from just an outside experience looks as beautiful as the iPhone.
It's interesting materials presented in an attractive way. The way the glass melds in with the polycarbonate is really neat. It looks like a really good phone. The thing that I'm fascinated by is they went with a small screen. So where on Android we have an arms race of increasing of ever larger screen sizes.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
What's the aspect ratio on the screen?
16:9. It's 840x480.
So it's taller than the iPhone.
This screen size arms race I think is utterly absurd. Said.
Yes.
Well, we'll talk about the Galaxy S2 later because I just wrote the review for that the other day and I feel like my feelings on that are pretty crystallized. But the bigger screens are nice. The problem, they make the Android keyboard a lot easier to use. Now, the Android keyboard has some other problems that require the larger screen size to make it easier to use. But when we're talking about the Galaxy Nexus coming out with a 4.7 inch screen or 4.6 inch screen or whatever it is, they're getting into crazy town.
If it's not like, if it doesn't fit comfortably in my pocket, and I'm talking about a regular pants,
you wear cargo pants,
right? If it doesn't fit comfortably in my pocket, I'm uninterested.
Yeah,
I don't think. I mean, I remember when the Evo first came out, and I'm looking at this going, 4.1. Just like how, where the hell does this even go in a pocket? And it does kind of fit. It's not they're not so ridiculous totally that you're carrying around a mini tablet. But I don't know. I kind of feel like the iPhone and what we're seeing now, I'm glad that Nokia decided to stick because I feel like with that screen size that they have, the porridge is just right. It doesn't need to be any bigger than
that. Well, the way that the UI design is, there are only two tiles across each screen. So narrow is fine. Narrow and tall is fine.
It actually looks like there's some dead real estate on the right-hand side of the screen.
There's always dead real estate on Windows. Negative space is
I know, but I don't feel like they're using – I understand negative space, and I think it's a very important thing.
If you're questioning this, I don't think you really do understand negative space, Gary.
But there are ways to use negative space, good ways and bad ways, like anything to use negative space. And I feel like the way that they use it, just throwing it all down the right-hand side, makes it look like that they screwed up. It makes it look like they got the screen size wrong or something.
Well – okay, other stuff, 8 megapixel camera, Zeiss optics on the lens. Nokia
not as good
always
as the,
does
it's
that.
Similar to the M9, not as good as the N8.
Right. This is basically the N9 design. I think that this is a tweener phone that is something that Nokia was able to jam out really fast. The interesting thing about it is they're not releasing in the U.S. right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's coming to Spain, Italy, Germany, France, the U.K., and the Netherlands.
It's expensive.
Right now. Huh. For 470 euros, I
That's
think.
That's $700.
Well, I mean, I don't know what pricing is like for off-contract phones.
So how long is the U.S. going to have to wait?
There will be a portfolio of Nokia Windows Phone 7 phones coming to the U.S. in 2012.
Mm.
Now,
early 2012.
This is the portfolio of Nokia phones is a very deliberate thing to say when they went through and said the Lumia 800 is coming to these countries by this point. It's coming. The 710 is coming to these countries by this point, and then they say a portfolio of phones is coming to the U.S. in early 2012.
Why would they be holding off the U.S. launch now? Because it seems like one of the big issues with Windows Phone 7 is they've got this great operating system. Now they've got a great hardware partner, but every day they don't put these phones out. They're just ceding more ground to iPhone and Android.
So one of the things that's different about a lot of the rest of the world in the U.S. is that the two-year contract, while not exclusive to the U.S., is fairly unique. A lot of other countries, you don't do it. You pay upfront for the phone. You don't have the two-year lock-in on the data plan, and you buy maybe not unlocked phones, but relatively unlocked phones. You know, phones that you can move from carrier to carrier if mm-hmm. you want.
It's all GSM in Europe too.
Everything's GSM, yeah.
So it has to be AT&T,
and they don't have the band problems that we have here with right. T-Mobile and, right. and AT&T, mm-hmm. where they use different bands. I think that what's going to happen is that what happened is that Nokia needed to get a phone out by the end of the year to make Microsoft happy. They looked at the N9 and said, hey, this is a nice design. Let's see what we can jam in here.
Yeah.
Crank something out really fast, and we're going to see a new or updated design phone announced at CES or CTI or Mobile World Congress or something like that in early 2012.
I got to say that phone, I really want to get it in my hand because it's very rare, you know, because I like the iPhone so much. It's very rare that I look at someone else's phone and feel any kind of envy. But looking at that Lumia, I was like, wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to find – you said it before, but the first thing I thought was looking at the high-res pictures of this phone, it is the first phone since that I think is competitive with iPhone 4 from a design perspective.
It's so simple as well. Like it's almost deceptively simple. It's like how difficult – it doesn't seem like it'd be that difficult to design a phone that looks this good. Because it's so basic.
Well, and
there's a lot of little touches that go into it.
It kind of looks like the iPod Nano.
I thought it looked like Zune, actually. Zune HD was the thing I thought.
I watched an interesting
iPod Nano, like the curved metal sides.
I watched an interesting video on, I think it was on Engadget, where the guy who was like the design, like Nokia's Johnny Ive, whoever that guy is, was
Johnny Finn.
Yeah. Yes, Jürgen Finlinson or whatever had a phone, and he was just did a 15-minute video where he was talking to this guy like on the expo floor about how they made all the design decisions, and it was obvious that so much thought had gone into every tiny little thing. Like, I love the idea that the composite material is that the color is injected into that like before it's even molded. So if you scratch it. It's not like you get like a white scratch underneath. Like it's that color all the way down. Right. So just little things like that, I thought, were just really neat touches.
That's
normal.
The process they had for the N9 also. But there is no front-facing camera, and that is
that's
a
weird thing, isn't it?
It's a sign, especially since Microsoft bought Skype.
Well, there's no front-facing cameras on other Windows Phone 7 phones.
Well, they're going to have to be. Come on, Synergy, Skype, front-facing cameras.
Yeah.
You own all this stuff now.
You just need a mirror. You put the mirror on the back, and you hold it up like this, and then
like at a hairdresser when they show you the back of your head.
But exactly. It's a sign that they did rush it, and the ones that come in the U.S. will hopefully have that.
I mean, that at least indicates some kind of urgency that they understand that, you know, the cell phone market, when in this, especially in America, where people get locked into two-year contracts, is that every day that someone else is buying someone else's phone, that you've lost that customer for 2 years.
I think you brought up a sort of interesting point about Skype, though. Skype and Windows phones with front-facing cameras, assuming that happens.
Yeah.
Or just Skype on mobile phones in general, because obviously now Skype has become sort of validated on that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hugely disruptive, potentially.
To the phone system?
Right.
I agree. So I tried that the other day because I've been testing the Galaxy S2 and I did some Skype calls with the front-facing camera on that because I think it's maybe not the first Android phone with a front-facing camera I've tested, but one of them. And it's an okay experience. It's fine. The problems I have with Skype are mostly that Skype has gotten increasingly janky over the last 5 or 10 years. And just, you know, like weird things like when you hold up on the Android. So on the iOS version of Skype, because I was doing this with two phones, one in each hand, rather than doing it across the internet at first. There's no portrait control on the Skype client on Android.
Okay.
So you can't rotate from portrait to landscape. So if you're, you know, when you're video conferencing, I tend to do the portrait orientation rather than a landscape orientation because you want to have, you know, close up shot of your head.
Mm-hmm.
And just their inconsistency across all the platforms is like they at this point Skype is supporting so many platforms, and the fact that they're really inconsistent across those platforms is kind of a bummer for me on Skype. And with Microsoft owning Skype, I don't know what their incentive is to fix the Android client or to fix the Mac client or to fix the, you know, all the non-Windows and Windows Phone 7 clients.
Right. But Lloyd, you think it's disruptive in terms of people will just start using their phones as VoIP devices rather than traditional cell phones?
Why not?
Well, I mean, I've heard the argument made that like 10 years from now, there won't be traditional cellular voice networks anymore. They're just everything will be data.
Packet switch data. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's already packet switch data.
It's just selling you minutes.
Right.
Yeah. You just have a free, clever UI on top of that.
Right.
Just like they're selling you text.
I think that the phone companies are going to work very hard to prevent that from happening.
I'm sure they're going to try, yes.
And even if I do use Skype, what they're going to do is reduce the data plan transfer caps and make minutes so cheap that you can't not have them. Just because they don't want people off of that needle,
yeah.
As it were. The other phone that Nokia announced is the Lumia 710. It's same basic guts, 512 megs of memory in both phones. I think the Lumia, I don't know what the memory
only
is.
Has eight gigs. Flash.
The 816.
Yes.
And the camera is 5 megapixels instead of 8 megapixels in the Lumia 810. It's a different design too. It's not as slick, but it does have replaceable back polycarbonate
for the kids. Panels.
Well, and another emerging markets phone. It seemed like they're going to push that into Asia and Hong Kong and stuff like that. I don't think they announced a whole lot of European availability for that. And of course, again, it is unclear what the portfolio of Nokia phones is in the US. They did say they're going to do LTE and CDMA versions as carriers request, which to me says Verizon and Sprint, I guess, because who else uses CDMA? And apparently there were Verizon people in the audience at Nokia World. So somebody got spy shots of Nokia, of a dude with a badge that said Bob Verizon Wireless. So
I really do hope, just for the sake of competitiveness and because I want good things to succeed, that Microsoft and I guess by the same token Nokia can really, even though they're coming in late, can come in and really make a fight of it and not just be it an iOS Android duopoly. I think having a third real competitor in there slugging away is just going to make the whole thing more interesting.
Yeah. Do you have two of these chicken shirts? Do you have a yellow one and a blue one?
Yeah, I have a yellow one as well. Because I knew I wanted the shirt, but I didn't know what color or what manufacturer would make the better version, so I just ordered it from two different places.
Okay, there you go.
And I prefer this one.
This one seems to be cut better.
None of it's all. None of
I have
licensed.
No idea.
Gary only cares about intellectual property when it relates to film and TV.
Or if the money's going in my pocket, yes. Basically. It's all they care about.
So
very mercenary.
What can Microsoft do with Windows Phone 7 to give it success of Android?
Yeah, because I mean the problem right now is that Windows Phone 7, according to Gartner, is I think 2% of the U.S. smartphone market.
Which ironically is what Obama said the iPhone might get.
Well, okay.
Funny how that comes back and gets you.
That's going to haunt him for a while,
so,
I think.
Let's say not going directly against iPhone because iOS people are not going to switch.
Well, no, but it is going to. I mean, it's the same category of product. So
the mistake everybody makes is that the way to grow your market share in the smartphone market isn't to go and take market share from Android or iOS or one of the established players. It's to go get the other 95% of people that don't have smartphones today to buy your phone.
There's such a huge untapped market.
Right. And Apple is doing that with the free 3GS and cheap iPhone 4. Mm-hmm. Android has been doing that with tons of cheap froyo phones.
If Microsoft wants to really get market share with these phones, what they should do is subsidize data plans.
But what is the real percentage of people that are still out there waiting to jump, you know, into one
95% of the market.
95%, well, not of Americans.
How many sold? What
are you saying? That only 5% of Americans have a smartphone.
I'm sure
I find
I'm
that difficult
this up
to believe.
Now that we talk about this, but my understanding is that that might have been the worldwide share. It's what your boy Tim Cook said it at the Apple keynote. 5% of the overall market. That might be worldwide.
I like how Tim Cook's my boy now.
Well, you know. You're waving your Apple flag pretty
just,
hard.
Just keep hammering on that narrative.
I think you can say vast majority and still be correct. I mean, that's the untapped market. I mean, that's what market.
But if you look at if you look at the pie of where people currently are, it's mostly iOS and Android have fairly like an equal share, right? They dominate. So only so many of you.
There's some BlackBerry, and then there's two dudes with Symbian.
You can still win those people over, though, if you make the better product. People's contracts come to an end. They're always looking for the best deal, the best phone. What locks people in is the ecosystem.
Here's the thing.
I would actually consider going to a Windows Phone 7 phone if that Nokia phone was amazing. The problem is I've got so much sunk cost buried into my apps and the iTunes system and the whole thing that switching over seems
like a
big hassle.
Come on, be realistic. You're not switching to Windows Phone 7.
I'm telling you, you can mock it all you want, but if a phone comes along that's better than the iPhone 4S,
you're in.
I'll get it.
So
I just want the best thing, whoever makes it.
To me, the thing that's holding Microsoft back is the data plan. Like the thing that's preventing the other people that don't have smartphones from buying smartphones is a $25 to $40 a month data plan, depending on what kind of phone you get. And
that's the case across all systems, though, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the barrier that needs – if they want to get more people that don't have – once you have the smartphone – we were talking about this earlier. Once you have the smartphone and you realize what always-on data means, then $25 or $30 a month doesn't seem like a lot of money. When you're sitting there and you have a dumb phone that sits in your glove box when your car breaks down on the side of the road, it's really hard to say, oh, yeah, okay, I need to have – and I have to charge this every night? That's kind of annoying.
I think the whole idea of subsidizing data plan is really, I think, critical. Microsoft certainly has deep pockets, as does Apple. But if you could say that, you know, your Windows 7 phone can get unlimited data,
yeah,
that certainly gets very interesting.
Yeah, even you know, like a $10 – like a really inexpensive
– yeah.
Value proposition,
like
data
200
plan.
Megs or something really small, like what the old entry level data plans used to be.
That's not good, because then that gives people have been burned on going over their minutes, going over their text plans and stuff like that enough that if you give them normal people don't understand megabytes. 200 megabytes doesn't seem like a lot.
No, but it's the crack needle again, though. As long as you have plenty of warnings set up, and all the carriers offer this now, by law they're going to have to offer this. You know, they've got to tell you when you're like 50, 75, 90% of your data usage so you don't go over.
Do they? But,
oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Verizon does it just voluntarily.
I've never
voluntarily.
Tried that on AT&T. I guess I'm unlimited still.
Yeah, so you wouldn't affect you. But I get data. I have my data warning set up at 50, 75, and 90%.
But did you have to set that up, or did they?
No, it's automatically turned on. And
customer
service. And there are laws going through right now that are going to force all carriers to do that so that people don't get screwed on overages. The point I'm making, though, is if you were to provide, say, like how Amazon does with WhisperNet, right, free 3G coverage, you just don't get a lot of it. So like Microsoft could say, okay, you get one of our phones, you get 200 megs of data for free. We're the only people that offer a free data plan. But once you get people on that 200 megabyte plan, they're like, shit, I could use more of this. And then they start buying data.
Well,
you give them that free hit off the crack pipe first.
I also think they should do something like they do with Xbox Live points, right? You know, you can just buy a little card.
Oh, no, that's
oh, God.
Huh? Oh, no more fake currency, Lloyd.
800 points is $10, which is how many minutes?
No. You sell it as minutes.
People do that already. People buy these pay-as-you-go phones, right? And they top up their phones with these minutes.
Well, so the thing that I think that – the other way to handle this is to do an all-you-can-eat package deal. Like the thing that Sprint does or did, the $70 a month, get everything, all the data, all the text, all the voice you want, is a very easy to understand, probably not significantly more expensive than your dumb phone 200-minute data plan or whatever. I don't even know what a good dumb phone – voice plan is at this point, but they need to make it easy to understand and make it feel like it's not an opportunity for them to get chiseled to death.
Is Microsoft really going to get into the business of subsidizing carrier data
plans?
They
got to figure out something to get these phones in the hands.
This
of
is all pie in the sky. This is not going to happen.
Who knows? They should have done it with the Kin.
But I think part of the reason why we're talking about it though is we acknowledge that Microsoft has to come up with some crazy, radical, aggressive stuff if they really want to, you know, break this duopoly that's happening in smartphones.
Well, and the other thing, of course, is that, I mean, there's not been a whole lot of marketing for Windows Phone at this point.
It's supposed to be a big push coming this holiday.
Huge push.
There was a big push when it first came. Remember those Season of the Witch commercials?
Yeah. 2 weeks.
It's not enough.
I think the real push will come with Windows 8. I think it'll be sort of the unified OS, and that's when Microsoft will sort of roll it all out.
Windows 8 and not Windows Phone 8.
I mean,
well, Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, I think probably are going to be about the same time.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, they're saying that Windows Phone 8, the next one, is probably mid next year.
What an amazing coincidence, Norm.
Yeah.
What's going to be at the end of next year?
I tell you, I got to say, having got to play with the Windows 8 tablet recently, I'm really liking what they're doing. I think it's really cool.
We just don't know how performance is going to be on ARM chips.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot. What we played with is so early as to not be worth talking about.
But the potential is really sweet.
We're running Core i5, like a real computer,
and
a tablet, which is it's fine. But quad-core ARM, Cortex A15, that's all next year.
Yeah, we'll see.
Exactly. Have we talked about this enough? Do we want to move on? I feel like we've covered the Windows Phone 7.
What would it take for you to convert to a Windows Phone 7 phone?
Something like this, Nokia
phone.
You're looking for good hardware.
If the Lumia 800 came out in the U.S.
There are two things. First of all, I'd want to look at the phone and feel confident that I like the phone as much as the phone I had, or more than the phone I have right now. And then secondly, I'd have to look into the sunk cost ecosystem issue of like how easy would it be and how much of a hassle would it be to just bring all my music and everything that I have right now, just bring it over.
Right. Outside of just apps.
And even in apps, again, if I was Microsoft, I think it would be cool to offer a program like bring in your phone to a store. Show us all the apps that you've got, and we'll give you free, and we'll match all your apps in our ecosystem. App matching, why not? That's a good idea.
It would cost $50. That's
half the reason people don't want to switch is they've got hundreds of dollars sunk into their iPhone apps.
Honestly, I think it's more the music and video stuff would be my guess.
Yes,
having access to iTunes stores.
Somebody has hundreds of dollars in apps.
Some people do.
You don't want to look at my app.
I'm always amazed when people give me their phones and I'm paging through pages and pages of apps. I'm like, shit, how many apps do you have on your phone?
Folders and it's all folders.
Yeah, just crazy. I've got 3 pages of apps on my phone.
Well, the thing is, I've downloaded everything interesting that came out in the last year and a half, right? Because we do, in case you didn't notice, we do a video for apps every day.
Mm-hmm.
I use Twitter.
You're a special case.
I am a special case. But like literally the day that I go through and delete the stuff that I'm not using on the iPad, it's a day of reckoning for the app market everywhere.
App matching. I'm telling you, that's the promotion.
I don't think people care about apps. I think they care about music.
I think
I know, but like just theoretically. So my iTunes music library, I think a lot of which is in AAC, a lot of which is MP3. Would it be relatively easy for me to just port that over onto a Windows phone system?
Yeah, if they're unprotected, which most of them are now.
Yeah, they are now. Yeah.
I mean, in worst case, you go to iTunes and hit the button that says, hey, make these unprotected, and or sign up for iTunes Match and match them and then re-download them.
I'm going to sound very ignorant now. How do you do music management on Windows? If you've got a Windows PC, you just use the Zune software does it?
If you have a Windows phone,
On a Windows PC, you use the Zune software. Literally, there's a little icon at the bottom of the Zune that is the picture of your thing, and you can do it by playlist or by artist or by album, just like on iTunes.
Right.
Or you can also just select a whole bunch of shit and drag it down to the icon, and it just transfers wirelessly over
Wi-Fi. What if I have a Mac? Do they have a
Zune connector software that is not as good but does the same thing?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Of course, the other thing on Windows, the thing that's happened to me in the last 6 months or a year is that I've switched from buying individual albums on Amazon mostly to just pay $10 a month to RDO and add stuff to the collection there. So literally transferring my music from one phone to the next is as easy as downloading that app, hitting the sync button, and it knows what songs I want on the phone and what songs
I know. I've been thinking about getting one of those systems, paying for one of those systems, because there's been like 3 or 4 albums in the last week that have come out that I've been interested in all of them. And instead of, jumping in and buying the whole album, it would be great just to be able to, sample them and buy the ones you want.
Well, the nice thing is it gives me fixed cost for music because, like you said, it used to be that I'd have a month where 4 albums came out I was interested in. It's $45 that month, $40 that month.
Again, I still don't love the idea that I never really own anything. If RDO goes bankrupt tomorrow and shuts down, all your music just goes poof, right?
Well, then you sign up for another service.
It still sucks, though.
I would like at least download that library so I know what to buy later, because I've listened to songs. I don't know what my history is. I'm listening to Spotify, and I've listened to like 24 new albums in the past month. But if I don't want next month, I want to buy these albums. Where's my history?
Where is your – well, you can Scrabble. You Scrabble it all over to Last.fm. Services within services within services.
Meta services.
Yeah, exactly. We need a service for our services. What I need is a service that will log in all the services on my phone. Call it login. Log me in. I think we already have that.
It should automatically go to Facebook. That's what it should.
Should we talk about Nest?
Sure.
Have you seen the Nest thing, Lloyd?
No. Oh, you're the thermostat.
The crazy thermostat.
Yes, yeah. I want one.
Why do you want one, Lloyd? It's because
mostly actually because it looks cool. To be perfectly honest, mostly because I like the way it looks.
I like the knob.
Because I'm perfectly facile in programming our programmable thermostat.
Yeah, you are one of the few people I know that probably is capable of that.
A VCR,
right?
You can program a thermostat.
Right. Well, no, it's not even that. Actually, no. My thermostat's easier to program than a VCR.
Yeah, well, but okay. So for people who don't know what we're talking about, Nest is a what they're calling it is a learning thermometer. It's a
thermostat.
Sorry. Basically, you know, if you look at a current programmable thermometer, there's like 40 buttons, and it's a VCR problem. You know, you go into people's houses, they have a $100 programmable thermostat, and most people use it just like the old Honeywell that had the knob that you twisted to adjust the temperature when it's hot or cold. Because it's a difficult thing for normal people to do. There's manuals. Usually you flip open a little door and then there's like super fine print instructions. And it's like, well, what time do you want it to wake up on Tuesday? And you say, okay, Tuesday's a school day, so I have to have the kids. I want it to be warm in the house at 7 o'clock on Tuesday. And I want it to get cool at 9:30 because we all go to bed early on Tuesday night. And it's a big pain in the ass to program. You have to really think about what you're doing. What this does is it has a big knob, a friendly screen, and when you want it hot, you turn the knob up. When you want it cold, you turn the knob down. And then it picks up what you're doing.
It's the Harmony remote of thermostats.
Well, maybe. I mean, that's what they're claiming.
Yeah. I mean, that's the idea, right?
It's very designy.
Right.
I'm interested. Do you have air conditioning?
Yes.
Oh, you live in Sunnyvale. So you
I have central air.
It does not apply for me because I have no air conditioning.
Okay. I just have a furnace.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm bummed out. I'd have to retrofit my whole house with air conditioning.
to which, living in Pacifica, I don't need. $250.
Yeah, really expensive thermostat.
Yeah. But it does. It looks really, really nice.
It looks like a knob.
Well, I don't. You know, I'm remodeling my kitchen, so I look a lot of stuff, right? And we don't need to replace our thermostat, except that I kind of want one of these now that it came out.
Yeah.
But thermostats are not good. Programmable thermostats are not cheap.
No, they're $100 to $150.
That, yes, but if you want something that, you know, really ties in and does multiple stuff, it can get to $250.
Right. Well, and so the other thing that this does is it connects to Wi-Fi, so you can control it, I think, from a web interface or from a phone app.
Right.
And you can, you know, so it gives you another interface on top of the knob interface. Yep. If you want to tweak your settings and stuff like that. It's interesting because
I'm imagining people, though, however, hacking into your thermostat. That could be really amusing.
The first time I go to somebody's house that has one of these, I'm going to pair my phone to it and then adjust their thermostat for them as soon as I'm away. We're talking about the Nest, Gary. You had to step out and take a phone call.
Yeah, I saw that thing in the news this week. I like the idea of being able to turn the heating up without having to get up.
Yeah, well, I mean,
but it learns. The key thing, it really, is it learns patterns, right?
Yeah.
So after a certain period of time, it just does it for you. You don't have to actually dig out your app.
So then you only have to adjust it in the case of something unusual.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, that's so – I mean, especially in a city like San Francisco where you don't know what weather you're going to get from one day to the next. Sometimes
it's not just day to day, though. It's like if it knows that the temperature is a certain degree, then you'll want it you want to turn on your AC.
Oh, okay.
If you know it reaches a certain threshold.
It measures your patterns based on temperature and use, not just times.
Every time the ambient temperature drops below 66, this guy turns the thermostat up. Well, okay, that's when I'll turn the thermostat up.
Right. Well, but only during daylight hours.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll have to get one in. Maybe we'll get you to review it, Lloyd, since you're the only person we know with air conditioning. It's a weird product.
But the other thing, aside from its function, is that it's design. So the guy who worked on the original iPod, designed the original iPod.
He likes wheels.
It's his.
It looks very attractive.
Right.
Yeah.
Now,
here's a question for you. If it hadn't been like an Apple designer, would this have gotten as much attention?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. No,
huge marketing.
These guys did a good job with marketing, just in general.
And part of it's because it's one of the original Apple designers.
Right.
So do you want your thermostat looking, being the most attractive piece of,
here's the thing I don't like. It had a lot of blue lights, and I have
a blue LED problem.
Like, you have a house built in the 50s, right? And everything is like, you know, old Victorian molding or whatever.
Well, you see, I'd stick it. Now, it's going to be – my thermostat is mounted close to my kitchen, right, in this little cubby hole, all of which is now going to be remodeled. So actually, it'll be fine.
Okay.
Great.
So you can make it look like look like Star Trek in there. Put some runner lights and.
Oh, you should see this. We got like little stainless steel trim on the ceiling. Ooh. It's gonna be pretty neat. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
The point is, the trend is moving toward better design.
Right.
Matching design and function, caring not just about performance, but also the look.
Right.
The thing is, this is the first model. They'll come out with ones that fit into Victorian houses. I don't think there's a whole lot of Victorian houses with central air and heat in the Bay Area, at least.
I'm going to say that I think this technology, if they're just going to sell a high-end thermostat that looks futuristic, and they're going to push toward things looking futuristic.
Well, one of our users sent me a Twitter message last night. I think it was Dvorak. And he basically said, look, I sell air conditioning in South Florida, and this is going to be the best upsell I've ever had. Because a $250 thermostat I can make a ton of money on. Thank you guys for posting this. I never would have heard about it otherwise. I think that these guys have done a really good job marketing. Like any product that you see this kind of marketing for, it is you're paying for a significant portion of marketing in that
two. Yeah, I mean, the same kind of people that, you know, pay over the odds to import, you know, Japanese toilets and stuff are going to want this thing, right?
Man, I wish I had a Japanese toilet.
You don't have to buy a Japanese toilet anymore. Kohler makes one that's $6,500.
I know, and I was actually considering that. I was actually on the mailing list for that toilet. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's super high tech. You know, now, that's something I would like to see on
testing. You want the bidet.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, if there's one thing I don't want in the bathroom is touchpads. Because I know where people's hands have been.
It's really weird because I went onto the Kohler website after I heard about it.
And the
glamour shot of it is sitting in this kind of room that looks like it's somewhere up in the Hollywood Hills, but it's a completely glass-walled house. And it's just the toilet is just in the middle of this huge empty room. So it's like you're sitting on the toilet
in the wide open.
Not only can everyone in the room see you because there's no separate room, but anyone looking in the windows. And I remember tweeting about it a long time ago, and somebody wrote back and pointed out, and said, yeah, if you had a toilet that was that awesome, you'd want to see everybody.
It's the Al Bundy.
You want everybody to see shit.
Kohler has some really bizarre ads. I mean, I've been reading a lot of remodeling magazines, and Kohler ads are like really out there, like the one about the bathtub, you know, being punted down the canal in Hong Kong.
Well, they hire artists.
That's right. They
do have very fancy stuff.
Well, the glass house thing is like I think the toilet's in Europe someplace. Maybe it's in Berlin, but it's one-way glass. So you sit, you're in the public toilet in the middle of a public square.
But nobody can see you.
And nobody can see you, but you can see out.
That is so creepy.
Right. That would be really
very uncomfortable.
And we've been in bars at the Palms in Vegas. One of the bars there has bathrooms where the men's room and the women's room sinks face each other.
Uh-huh.
And there's like a window. Like the mirror is one way. Right.
What?
Or two, yeah, so you can see into the women's room.
Wait. Why would it be one way? So like,
I don't know
which way does it work?
Think I saw this on Eurotrash.
Yeah, you literally can look into the other gender's restroom.
Yeah.
While you're washing your hands, but you don't. You know, you
why
don't
would you tell the women about this?
The business, they can look in yours. Well, everybody
then
knows.
Then it's not one way.
Well, okay, it's not one way. It's two way. It's weird though. Maybe it's above the urinals. I can't remember. It was someplace awkward.
That's really weird.
Yeah, it was.
I always wanted the urinal to have indicator, you know, in terms of pints of beer, how much you're letting out. Because you never can
you,
tell.
You want to know, is this urination.
Is this one pint, two pints? Wow. I don't know. I can't tell.
Why do you need to know that?
Because then I can know how much I'm drinking.
I like the fly. I like the optimal spot fly in the urinal. Like no splash zone.
The psychological thing.
Yeah, well,
everyone aims for the fly, but it's not really a fly, and so it doesn't splash.
My crazy website for a long time was to build a urinal target website where you'd have a phone app that you go in, you like look at the urinal, and you match it. You take a picture of the urinal, you match it to see where you're supposed to aim.
Last thing I want is some guy in the public bathroom with a phone out.
Why not have some kind of?
I never did it.
Huh? Some kind of augmented reality app where it puts like things on the screen that you can shoot at.
That's what you need.
Yeah.
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 You're playing
a light gun game with your penis.
You guys need to get more sleep.
So the Nest is interesting. When is it coming out? Have they said? Nobody cares that much.
Yeah, it's a thermostat, dude.
It looks from the future. It's shiny. Blue lights. I don't like blue lights.
It is shiny. The one I saw had a red kind of clock face.
Well, the thing is, the clock face changes whether it's on cool or heat.
Oh, that's
so
clever.
In the summertime, it's blue, and in the wintertime, it's red.
Oh.
Now I gotta get one.
I don't need that. I don't want more blue lights in my life.
Now
depends on how bright it is.
Tent.
If it dims itself pretty down at night, then that's okay.
I want that little LED thing that you get on ThinkGeek that you put it on your faucet. And it makes the water blue or red depending on if it's cold or hot.
If you want to talk about useless gadgets, then there's number one on my list.
ThinkGeek is the place to be.
I like ThinkGeek. They do a lot of interesting stuff.
I am seriously putting myself on the waiting list for that.
The HAL 9000.
Oh, that's such a bad idea. Things, shit you will never use.
It's just fun. It's fun.
Oh. Nexus One, no ice cream sandwich? I thought they said that they was going to get ice cream sandwich.
Now Nexus One.
Wow, the Nexus S gets ice cream sandwich, but
Nexus 1 is too old. And you know, 3GS is actually older than Nexus 1. and 3GS got iOS 5.
To be fair, this is not that different from what Apple says, right? Like, the new system's only going to go back so many generations. Well, you can't put the latest OS on the old phone.
3GS is older than Nexus 1, and a 3GS got iOS 5.
Oh, so well, actually it's not great.
I don't know about your experience, but having put iOS 4 on a 3GS, I can tell you that it was like a terrible experience.
They fixed that, though. iOS 5 now runs much better on those phones.
The 3G iOS 4 was bad.
Right.
The 3GS I thought wasn't.
I've heard some people complaining about the iPhone 4 slowing down on iOS 5, which I didn't experience that.
I didn't notice that either.
My
4 is slower on 5.
You should wipe and reinstall. The iOS 5 has been – do we want to talk about the Nexus thing more, or are we good with that?
No, we should talk about it because I thought that Android fragmentation thing was interesting.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you a secret. Cyanogen will be out for the Nexus One with Ice Cream Sandwich as soon as Cyanogen releases an Ice Cream Sandwich version of Cyanogen. That's not a problem.
What does that mean?
So Cyanogen is a third-party ROM for Android, you know, one of the big one, I guess, is what I would say. And it's basically stock Android for phones that don't have stock Android experiences.
Okay.
And they have a long history of supporting phones like the original Android phone, the G1, the T-Mobile G1.
So you just use this instead?
You just put a third-party ROM on. It's fine. It's no big deal.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the process is on the Nexus phones. On some of the other phones, it's a little bit harder because the bootloaders are locked or
– But how many people do that?
They're rooted. I think more every day. Not many.
Well, but
the people who bought the Nexus One.
Yes, I agree. That's sort of a self-selecting audience,
right?
Yeah.
You know, since you could only buy it from Google.com/phone for a long time.
Although you've made the argument that the majority of Android users probably have no idea what version of the OS they're even running, let alone wanting to go in and cyanogen the thing.
But the people who bought the Nexus One, I'm sure
they're going to be aware.
Right.
There are two types of people who buy Android phones: the grognards, as you say, the people who like to get in and monkey around with bootloaders and load new launchers and all that stuff, and then the people who just want an iPhone competitor
they walk into a Verizon store and they say, okay, this one kind of has
the Facebooks.
It has the apps. Yeah.
It has the Facebooks and the Wi-Fis.
Yeah. I want a phone with Facebook and Twitter and probably just – I mean,
that's why there's a phone with Facebook.
And is the Nexus One just as a phone looking a bit long in the tooth at this point?
Well, it came out December of 2008?
2.5 years ago.
2009. It was right before we launched the site.
Yeah, but phone years
right?
are like dog years.
Yeah. 2 years ago.
That seems like a long time ago.
It's a long time in the phone business. It's a long time.
Do you guys feel like that's slowing down, or like the pace of phone advancement is slowing down?
Certainly not on the Android side, because you know, again, it's crazy to me how there's a new phone almost every day.
Well, I think once the whole quad core thing rolls out, I think at that point internal hardware at least won't change as often.
Still want 1 gig of RAM.
Right.
On phones, most phones don't have that, and a lot of it's battery because the extra 512, even when idling, will suck battery. It's design.
Yeah,
design and software.
So we're moving into washing machine territory with phones.
No, user experience.
Hey, now we're front loading. Hey, now we're top loading. Now we have a stump in there that agitates.
It's all about user experience.
Washing machines are awesome.
I love washing machines. Amazing. Like, the best thing I ever did was buy a front loading washing machine. It was like a miracle. You could pack so many clothes in there.
Norm made a very intelligent tweet the other day. I can only imagine he copied it from something he saw.
No, I actually thought of this.
Where he said that phones used to be
consumer
gadgets used to be spec led, like who had the hottest specs, and then
speed.
Then it became about who had the best features. But now what really people care about is the user experience.
Well, this is something we've talked about since we launched the site.
Well, if you look at reviews, both in marketing and reviews. Reviews used to be all about speed. How many megahertz, right? What's the bandwidth? And then features. And you look at reviews today. It's all still feature. You're the X number of features.
Right. All these things are just kind of adjuncts to the actual experience.
It's
of
quantitative metrics are easier for people to understand. Period.
Right.
But they don't matter anymore.
Even the geeky stuff. I mean, even the really geeky stuff. Now it's like, how smooth is my Battlefield 3 run? It's not. You know, how much memory and what my clock rate of my core and my graphics card is. It's how smooth.
But those numbers are the only way to quantify it, short of actually experiencing it, right? So what else can you do?
But on phones, there's no apples to apples comparison. An iPhone 4 with a single core 800 megahertz processor is substantially smoother, better experience – than a shitload of Android yes. phones that have dual core and, 1.2 gigahertz right. CPUs.
And so that's making a mockery of the system spec led reviews and things like
right.
that.
Right. That's the point is the clock speed on like the fact that the Windows Phone 7 Nokia phone is a single core CPU doesn't matter at all if the experience is good.
Again,
it's not like you're recompressing raw images or something on your phone.
I saw this a lot when I switched to Verizon. I was worried about the slower data speeds on Verizon. I'm going on these forums and saying all these people are doing is like using the speed test app and looking at those numbers going, oh my God, my numbers are really low. They're not understanding how to read the numbers. All they see is the dial doesn't move very much. They go, oh, my phone sucks. I'm like, actually hit up a web page. You're trying to download something. How does that work? Oh, it works fine. So why do you give a fuck what the speed test says? It's an abstract number that's not got nothing to do with your actual real world experience.
So it's clout.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about abstract numbers.
Just so we're all on the same page.
Yeah. By the way, how's your clout doing, Will?
I don't give a shit. It's an arbitrary yeah. number that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's funny how you say that as it plummets.
I said that 2 weeks ago.
Your interest in clout is directly proportional to the amount of clout that you have.
And I have refused to sign on.
But see, I look at the people who've refused to sign on, and I'm like, oh, these people they right. made the right choice.
Lloyd refuses to sign on, doesn't give a shit. Will actively tweet about not giving a shit, and that you shouldn't give a shit.
Yeah, that's how much he doesn't care. He tweets about it all the time.
And in fairness, I only retweeted other people who tweeted about not giving a shit. The interestingness of clout is I don't know. It's just – it's weird.
It's like been in the news a bit this last week, right, because they just redid all their algorithms.
Well, they got
and everyone's
more press,
numbers got changed.
They got more press for dropping everybody's number 15 points than anything that they've done up until this point.
Right.
So yay for them.
Yeah.
I just
it is nonsense, isn't it? Why do any
nonsense.
Of us care?
It's
Xbox
not on the list for a reason.
It's like Xbox Live achievements, right? I mean
– But again, like
but
how –
they're tied to the doing something.
Gamer how points. Interesting. Well, I mean,
the gamer point thing. It's like, you know, your gamer point score is going up. It's like, what does that actually mean?
But here's the thing. Because there's an economy there, you know that disc games are 1,000 points and downloadable games are 200 points. You can look at your score of 20,000 points or whatever.
10 points for finishing the tutorial.
Right. And you kind of know, okay, it's not weighted at all. Completely arbitrary, but gives you a relative metric about how many games somebody's played.
But the thing is, gamer score doesn't tell you how good you are at games. It just tells you how many games you play. Because it would be easy if you wanted to spend all day playing games to rack up a massive
people do
gamer
that.
Score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's whole websites devoted to that.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely. Like and and the reason why I think people have been interested in clout is because how interesting you are or how much influence you have on the internet, which is something that some people, I guess, want to know and care about, it's very hard to quantify that. And so here's an attempt to quantify, even though it may be a massive scam. Someone came out and put a number on it and said, you are 72% in terms of your interestingness, and people are getting excited about it.
As with many other things, the thing that's interesting about clout to me isn't the number, the arbitrary number that's assigned to my relative value based on the internet. Because I already have a lot of this. Like, there's number of followers, there's number of retweets, there's number of people who favorited your post. You can look at all that. There's all sorts of useless metrics there. The thing that's interesting to me about clout is that it says, hey, Gary is interesting about screenwriting and podcasting and puppies.
And right? one thing that I will say is that the topics that they say you're that influential on, they actually tend to be pretty an right. accurate reflection of what it is that you're tweeting about.
Well, in theory, yeah. It's an accurate reflection of what you're tweeting about. Maybe
like
not
you're influential about like tech and podcasting and journalism and things that are actually what
I
you're
find it funny
what
that
you're
I'm
all about.
That I'm good on journalism. Like I would have never thought that people would say, hey, you're good on journalism.
Well, you are technically a journalist.
I suppose. I mean, I don't really feel like a journalist, but I don't write a whole lot, it turns out.
Yeah, well, that's – but journalism,
more
is, not
of a product
just, review journalism
guy.
Is not just about writing anymore.
I suppose. Anyway, I don't want to talk about the cloud stuff anymore because it's super – it's dumber now than it has ever been
yes,
before.
Now with even more dumb.
Do we want to talk about the Android fragmentation thing? I haven't read the story yet. Oh, that was what we were talking about?
We kind of talked about it. There was a chart that somebody sent to me and I retweeted it that showed it was a breakdown of the Android market and all the different phones that are available and how they've evolved in terms of when they got their OS updates.
Yeah.
And just looking at it is just a snapshot of just utter chaos. And, well, and you know, I think kind of solidifies my argument of why Android can be a very good operating system, but you really are entering a big unknown when you choose a phone and a carrier.
So the thing for me is, and we talk about this a lot, but we don't always bring this point up. The point that's important to remember is that most people probably don't give a shit. The vast majority of people using Android phones don't care whether their phone's updated, what version right. of the OS they're using. All they care is, does it work? Can I connect to Facebook?
Right.
Can I check email?
Right.
Right.
Is it in Google's interest for them to be educated and care? and be invested in that platform like iOS users?
Well, in the sense that if you want people to like Android, you want as many of them as possible to be using the best, latest version of the experience,
right? I mean, I don't get it. You know, remember Intel Inside?
Yeah.
How that actually made a difference?
Mean the Centrino stuff?
Yeah, right. For a period of time. I mean, it doesn't make a difference anymore, really, I don't think. But at one point in time, it actually made a difference, and people sort of cared about that. I think with Android has no real branding in people's heads.
Right.
And I think
most people think Android and they think Droid, not Android.
Right. And I think that's going to be a problem for Google going forward if they don't establish a brand.
Well, they've tried to put it out there a lot. I mean, that little green Android dude shows up in all the phone commercials.
Yeah, but they need a Brian Eno design chime to like really stick it in people's heads.
Right.
Bum, bum,
dun,
bum, bum.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, they need something. Because here's the thing, I'm going to make up some fake feature omissions here that don't bear any resemblance to what's really going on in Android. But let's say I've got an Android phone and
this is a thought experiment.
I'm a typical dumb consumer that's got an Android phone but doesn't really understand that Android is an operating system made by Google and it's just the thing that's on my phone. And I'm like, "Oh, but why doesn't this have cut and paste, or why doesn't it have customizable this or that?" Android probably actually does all have all these things, but any feature that it's missing that I may see on my friend's Windows phone or iOS, next time I come to upgrade, I may say, "Well, fuck Android, I'm going to go get this." Where in fact, Android does have those things. It's just not on my phone because I don't have the latest version.
Well, the problem I have with Android isn't the fact that, I mean, they're actually much better on features than iOS in a lot of cases. I mean, the turn-by-turn nav thing is
they have the most features and the most customizability.
Many of them just don't work very well.
Mm.
Like the turn-by-turn nav stuff is good, but the keyboard is still I think the Windows keyboard is the best one of all the ones that I've used. The iOS one is a pretty close second at this point, although where they put that voice control button on the 4S is super duper obnoxious.
Can you turn that off?
I think you can, but then you can't do voice control of text
dictation.
Entry, so
yeah.
You can't do dictation. So it's like, okay, both of these are bad choices. And then the Android, even the Gingerbread keyboard, which is the best Android keyboard that Google shipped so far, is still it's still very difficult to use.
Mm.
I think that the thing that everybody's realized is that modal, the thing where they have the line of potential words that you're choosing above the keyboard is something that just doesn't work.
Right.
Normal people don't use that.
Unless you're typing really slowly and really long words.
Right. I mean, the best solution is to power on and fix it at the end of the sentence. And that line above the keyboard doesn't help with that. What is it? Not swipe, the other one. The other Android keyboard. Swipe is the one where you draw the lines through the words. Mm-hmm. That's weird and normal people aren't ever going to use that.
I use it for tablets.
What's the one that we had? Shit, I can't remember. It's another that starts with S. The people came into the office.
I know what you're talking about.
Boy, I'm going to get eaten alive for this one. People are screaming in the chat, I'm sure. Anyway, like that is the closest I've seen to a good Android keyboard and still not – I mean normal people aren't going
SwiftKey.
To ever – SwiftKey, thank you. Normal people aren't ever going to download a third-party keyboard for their phone. So anyway, let's move on down the list. There have been a lot of rumors about televisions this week, and
let's start with the bold declaration.
My proclamation is that Apple is not a television producing company. It's not in their business. They're going to keep selling boxes that you plug into your existing TV.
Wait, that's not specific enough. Will Apple make a television?
The Apple TV is a box that connects to your TV, not an actual.
You're like a politician. Answer the question.
I know that's what it is right now.
I don't think they're going to make a TV.
Okay.
I think that making a TV is a dumb business for Apple to get.
Okay.
I would say with 100% certainty, when Steve Jobs was still in charge, that there were no Apple TVs coming.
Hold on now. I think Norm is going to be able to throw this in your face.
I got the book right here. I can throw in your
face. The book in which Steve Jobs is quoting as saying, "I've cracked how to do an HD TV."
Yep. But
so this is the guy that had no interest in doing it.
How often does Apple spin product lines?
I just want to make
in
this
the past 10 years.
I just want to straighten out. You're saying so you are increasingly in the wilderness. I'm not taking a position yet, but many other people are. The New York Times is just out today with a story saying that they're going to have an Apple TV that is powered by Siri by 2013. Again, I'm not taking a position, but you are. You're saying that this is not going to happen.
I'm saying that Apple's business with TVs is in boxes, not TVs.
Again, I can't get a straight answer out of you.
The Apple TV is a box that you plug into your TV using HDMI, DisplayPort, or some other video transference technology,
right,
and delivers apps and an Apple experience to every TV,
right?
Not a device that's integrated.
So again, it's all nonsense.
Because here's the thing:
give me a straight answer. Apple,
fucking TVs, Gary. I can't say it any more clearly.
Apple will not make a TV screen display that's got like Apple TV stuff built into it.
That is what I was
saying. Okay, that's all I wanted.
No. What I'm saying is the Apple TV is a thing that connects to any TV, not a TV itself.
Right, you're telling me facts that everyone already knows. I'm asking you to speculate.
I'm saying that's the thing that's going to continue being the case because they can't iterate fast enough on TVs to work the way that they work.
Okay, good. You've made your position. Right. We'll see what happens.
No, I want to keep talking about this because I'm going to get this thrown at me for probably 3 or 4
years.
Yeah,
I mean, we're going to have to buy more and more eggs to write all this shit on.
Here's the thing: Apple works by releasing a product and then looking at how people use it, and then re-releasing it again the next year with some minor or major improvements.
This is a fascinating insight into Apple's business.
Well, how many iPhones have you had in the last five years?
I personally buy the new one every year.
Right. Are you going to buy a new 60-inch TV every year?
No.
So the question is...
But I'm not going to buy a new iMac every year either. They put a new one of those out. I've got a 2009
but those
iMac.
iMacs are incredibly iterative products. If you look at the way that they advance through the phones... If they release a TV 1 year and then they significantly change the way it works and add massive new features to it and go from a dual core to a quad core CPU or a single core to a dual core CPU, you can't upgrade your TV every year. There's no place – nobody needs 60-inch TVs throughout the house. Like the time that Apple's going to release a TV is when you paint some shit on the wall and it just works. Like when we're in future Back to the Future land where you look up at the wall and it goes from being a nice pastoral scene with – deer and turkeys and stuff.
I have to admit, I'm having a hard time imagining it as well. It doesn't seem very Apple.
It is an incredible challenge because the margins in TV space are very low.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Apple has a long history of being able to charge a massive premium for their products.
Sure.
Apple also
does have a long history of going into markets where they traditionally have not existed and eating everyone's lunch.
If I were Sony,
I wish I had
or a Toshiba. Right now, I would be kind of afraid.
I would too.
I would be out. Not necessarily that Apple will come out with a physical TV, but all that investment they've made in their app space and
the investment they've made in their app space is garbage.
That's money down.
We all know that. There's no that money is flushed straight down the toilet.
I have an LG 60-inch plasma.
Does it have Plex?
It has something called the home screen.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen. It's like, and I always and the home button on the remote, since I don't use the LG remote.
Use the Harmony.
I use the Harmony. But when I do use the LG remote, the home button is where the inner button should be.
Yeah.
And you press the home button, and all of a sudden, this bizarre screen. It's like, what do I do with this? And navigation is not
intuitive.
That's
the Wii-style remote, isn't it?
They have one of those, too. And that's actually pretty neat, because then I don't have to worry about which fucking button I push to navigate around.
The thing is, unlike computers and smartphones, a lot of things that can be confusing to people, TVs aren't traditionally something the majority of people have a hard time figuring out how to work.
Regardless of whether Apple makes actual physical TV, the point is that all this stuff
apps
started,
on your TV is a
this,
big deal.
This stuff started,
just to be clear,
from the book.
Yeah,
when in an interview with Steve Jobs, he said he cracked it. What that means, we don't know. So tons of speculation coming out of that, and people have put out the
challenges.
Hard
to believe people would speculate about Apple stuff.
Put out the challenges of Apple entering the TV space. So one, that ecosystem is very – there's so many parties
with
hands in it.
For all we know, when he said he cracked it could have been exactly what Will just said. Our TV is a box that attaches to TVs.
A TV is a dumb screen.
For even that to work and for Apple TV to be more than a quote-unquote hobby – they would still need to find a way around cable companies.
Again, we never know.
They already have a way around cable companies.
I remember years ago when there were rumors that Apple was going to get into the phone business and do the Apple phone.
Yep.
And there were so many mock-ups and speculations, and people go, it could look like this or that. And they all look ridiculous compared to what Apple eventually released. Like, you know, again, Apple came up with something.
And that phone looks ridiculous compared to what Apple's selling today.
Yes. So for us to sit around going, I can't see Apple can get into the TV space. I think, insinuates that
I never said they're not going to get into the TV space. I said they're not going to sell TVs.
They're not going to sell TVs. Okay. I tell you what I would like is an update to the Apple TV box that has Siri.
You know what I would like?
Not a software update, but actual hardware.
Yeah, hardware update.
The promise
that
of
has
Kinect.
That Kinect.
The Hello Batman.
Yes, Hello Batman.
You know what my phone, I can do that. Hello Batman. You know what I want? I want apps on my TV. Now, that's all I want.
It's interesting you say that, really, though, because you've also constantly complained about so-called smart TVs and these bullshit apps that they come loaded with.
I'm going to tell you why. It's really easy. Consumer electronics companies are really bad at software.
So what type of apps do you want on your TV?
I would like to have an ABC app and a CBS app and an NBC app and a Fox app and a
content apps
and HBO Go.
That's a whole other thing.
And ESPN. And
this is what I want. I was just talking to a friend of mine about this the other day. This is what I want. I want a la carte TV where I can say, okay, here's a bunch of money.
You have that right now.
I want this, 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 and this. And I don't need this other shit.
Yeah.
Don't even plug it. Because I got on my Comcast box, right? It has a favorites button. You can populate a list of your own favorite channels. I'm only ever on that, and there's like 20 maybe 25 channels on it. So I'm like, why do I even have 500 other channels?
I think psychology is going to work against Apple. I think people are still used to paying the flat amount every month, and it is expensive. And
but
a la carte.
My cable bill is $1,200 a month without $1,200 a year without internet. I mean, that is insane.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what makes sense is what Will is saying is that there's already plenty of people out there making TVs.
I'm sorry. What did you say, Gary?
I'm saying what you're saying on the face of it makes sense, which is a lot of people out there making TVs. But you can turn it into an Apple product just by plugging this box into it.
Yeah.
Right? This hockey puck that's going to do it for you.
Because the thing is, with HDMI, the Apple TV can control the TV, turn it on, whatever. You literally need their one stupid little six-button remote, which
You can clone on a Harmony anyway.
Which is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
And give us access to the content apps that are on iOS already for iPhone,
yes,
iPad.
Yes.
And put those on the TV, and I'm going to be thrilled. I will.
And again,
literally, if there's an AMC app and an HBO app, my cable's gone.
How is that much different than what the Apple TV does today?
You can't get live content on the Apple TV.
Well, you can get some.
Okay. No, you can't get live stuff. It's always.
Right.
You wait until it pops up in the store the next day, and then you pay $3.
I don't care about live TV. I would happily watch everything time shifted one day from live.
Do you watch sports?
No, that's why I don't care.
Okay, so you're good. Do you watch the news?
I do watch the news.
Yeah, so you can't watch news.
But increasingly I get my news off the internet. Cable news is driving me more and more crazy. I would happily give up cable news. No, I don't watch sports. I'll go to someone's house and watch Super Bowl every year, but I don't give a shit about live sports.
So what did Steve Jobs mean when he said he cracked it?
Well, what's interesting, you know, what's come out of the Jobs the death of Jobs and a lot of people talking about him is, you know, a lot of people have said, quite rightly, that Apple didn't really invent that very much stuff. They identified what other people were trying to do and just found a way to do it in a way that actually worked for people. Like, there were smartphones before the iPhone. The iPhone was the first one that people actually enjoyed using. And I think that there are smart TVs out there, and whether it be through a later iteration of the box or an actual TV set, which I admit seems more unlikely, that Apple is probably the most likely company to come up with a way of making your TV smart. More like an iPad, but a big screen that you watch that people would actually find desirable. That seems more likely.
Okay.
All right.
Is it going to be Siri? Is it going to be AirPlay?
I think voice control in the living room doesn't work.
I don't think it
works for me.
Siri.
I love it on Kinect.
Hello,
Xbox,
Batman.
Xbox Play.
Really?
Yeah, the only time
I ever use it is to pause something.
Yeah.
Xbox pause. And then usually.
Oh my God, pause! Xbox! Oh my God, pause! See how they're going to market it, and I can kind of already see this happening. Is that you're going to say, Siri, I'm in the mood for something funny, and it will throw all the comedies on the screen, and I'm like, I don't know if that's how I really care to do it.
You know,
I don't have a personal relationship with my TV set.
How about, like, you know, Siri, when is Starship Troopers on next?
You know,
now that is much better than clicking through that awful on-screen keyboard searching for
Google TV. Here, the two things. One is, it's really, really frustrating to me, even with the TiVo Premiere, which is a fine device but slow. It's not as – they've made that product worse.
Are they still plugging away at that Google TV?
TiVo.
Oh, TiVo. Okay.
It's frustrating to go from a really super smooth, fast interface, whether it's an Android phone, Windows phone, iPhone, whatever, and then pick up that remote and go ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Yeah, it's awful. Ka-chunk. That's what put me off
ka-chunk.
It.
The other thing that I saw this morning that was really interesting is either Jim Brooks or Albert Brooks, I can't remember which one, was posting on Twitter that he wanted a DVR bartender. So he wanted to sit down and say, hey, Joe, you know, I feel like watching something tonight, but I don't know what it is. And literally have like, oh, okay, so I want to watch something that's like Breaking Bad, and then get that same kind of recommendation engine going on the TV. which is a super interesting thing. That's something you can't do on a DVR.
You think that's what Amazon's going to try to do with their little tablet?
I mean, maybe. Amazon does recommendations better than anybody else, I think.
And then how? At what point will the Fire also have an interface that controls the download to your TV?
Amazon's building platforms on TV, right? Like, if you look at Roku and Boxy and all that stuff, there's all Amazon apps.
Right.
They're pushing hard into that, and the content providers are behind them because they don't want to make Apple, the iTunes store.
Right.
They don't want to have the same thing that happened with music, where iTunes has 89% of share. So they're going to lean hard into Amazon, Netflix, and all the other providers. I think that's a real possibility.
Yeah.
Hey, you liked this. Sometimes I think Amazon knows me better than anybody else in the world.
Doesn't work in my house because so many different people order stuff.
Recommendations at all. Like, I go to that Netflix recommended for you thing when I log in, and it's never anything I'm interested in seeing.
Oh, the Netflix one is not very good.
No.
But the Amazon one's better. I mean, the one area in the Amazon thing that works for me is the Kindle store, because I'm the only one that has a Kindle in the family, right? So any book bought for Kindle is something I bought. So, and the recommendations there is, I think that's
– See, that's funny. It's the exact opposite for me, because Gina and I use separate Amazon accounts for household purchases and stuff, and we share a Kindle account. So I get a mixture of lady books and Will books mixed up into the it's.
Really I wish there was a better system. I know that there's so much music and so much television and so many movies out there that I've never seen and may never see that I would love, right? And the recommendation algorithms that are out there are trying to get them to me based on what it's seeing, but again, they're not very good. What I want is a system that can like really get into my brain and know exactly what's going to push my buttons and give me those recommendations.
Well, that's why there was Netflix Prize, right? They just want to improve it marginally.
Yeah.
Well, but what we're not talking about is improving it marginally. What we're talking about is looking at – what I want is somebody to aggregate all the stuff that I watch. I mean, you can – that's out there. Yeah. My Netflix – everything I've watched on Netflix is on Netflix. Everything I've ever bought from Amazon is stored on Amazon. If you take those two things, you should be able to paint a pretty good picture likes.
I mean, can you imagine something in the future where like recommendation system – let's say I've got my Apple TV or whatever it is, my Siri box, my Netflix box, whatever it is that's there that's actually – that, for example, when I'm watching a comedy, is listening to how much I'm laughing or how much I seem engaged or distracted.
I don't want this at all.
But you'll get better recommendations.
I'm cool with not having the microphone on.
Gary only likes racist jokes.
Yeah.
Let me recommend the racist books.
Absolutely.
The TiVo app right now kind of does this. It's one of the few places that pulls in lots of different content sources, because the way it works is it says, okay, you have a Netflix account, you have an Amazon account, you have all the stuff that's on your DVR, and it knows all the TV shows I've thumbs up over the last 20 years or 10 years, whatever long I've had a TiVo. So it's able to look and see, okay, right now you're watching Jimmy Fallon and Fred Armisen is on Jimmy Fallon on this episode of Jimmy Fallon that you're watching. So maybe you like Portlandia too because you like Fred Armisen.
Right. So is that contextual based? Like the index like actors and is that – or is it based on similar behavior?
It's
like
both.
SFM style.
It's not a home run though. Just because I like Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones doesn't mean I want to see the boring movie where he's playing a doctor or something lame.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's my problem with the Netflix one, because that's what you always get.
Right. Netflix. It's a difference between separating intent.
Like, my favorite part of Netflix recommendations though is what's playing in your neighborhood. I love that because
you can't get that on the apps.
Oh well. Yeah. But I mean, it's just at one point everything in my in what's playing in your neighborhood, every single movie was a Bollywood movie.
Oh, that's funny. See, for me, it's all surf movies, because it's surf movies and stoner movies in Pacifica.
When I first got my TiVo, the first generation TiVo that came in like 10 years ago, I set it up to record
14.
This British soap opera that I like watching. I don't watch it so much anymore, but I used to watch it in the UK when I came here, wanted to continue to watch it, and you used to be able to get it on the BBC channel. So I set TiVo up to record it, and then the next day my suggestions are all like telenovelas and stuff. It's like, oh, you like foreign soap operas.
Yeah.
So I get all this stuff that I have no interest in watching. So that, in that example, it's completely missed the point.
Well, that's the funny thing. I upgraded the TiVo hard drive a few weeks ago, and now that it has a ton of free space, it's recording a bunch of crazy shit, and it's all it is diving deep into TV shows that we have watched at some point over the last, like I said, 10 or 12 years. Well, I guess since we got a series 3, so 4 years, 5 years, and just the stuff that it dredges up is amazing.
How much of it actually works for you? Like, what's the batting average of stuff that it will say?
Oh,
you might like
low.
This, and you actually want to watch it.
It's real low, but the thing is, for that kind of recommendation, you don't need a real high batting average. You just need an occasional hit. It's like baseball is a good metaphor. you know, if you hit 30%, you're right. Done pretty well.
Because otherwise, your option is scrolling through everything, right?
So. Yeah, I don't want to. I never use the guide. I never look at what's on live TV.
It could throw up 20 recommendations, right? And let's say that somewhere in those 20 movies that it's recommending based on a previous choice, there's one movie there that if you watch it, you're going to love it. It's going to be one of your favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
But once it's given you those 20, based on just your own luck and judgment, there's nothing to necessarily get you to that movie. Right. Because what you really love about a movie or a TV show or a book or a record album is so
a record what, it's so album.
It's so
really.
I'm 39 years old. Well,
a record
it's
album.
So it's complicated. Double. It's so complicated.
And also, even if they give you a movie recommendation that you might very well love,
right.
Taking that chance on it because it's a 2-hour commitment,
right.
It doesn't qualify that. It doesn't say right. You know. It's not like the friends telling you you have to watch Netflix. This
because
movie.
Because we're talking about art, and I often can't tell you why a particular song or a particular TV show is my favorite.
Right.
If I can't explain,
why do you
it
like
you,
Breaking Bad and not Weeds?
If I can't exactly, if I can't explain that to you, how can I ever expect a recommendation algorithm to figure it out?
Well, that's one of the things I like about Netflix, and Amazon does this too, where it says, "Hey, you like this because you might like this because you also liked Happy Feet."
Right.
But that's not – still doesn't mean anything.
No, I know. The problem is separating patterns, behaviors versus intent. This is a hard thing to do.
I mean, there are certain things that are kind of constants. Like I know, for example, that I'm probably going to be interested in any movie directed by the Coen brothers. And I'm going to be interested in any album released by a certain artist because you do follow certain creators. Yeah. And that's a very easy thing to do.
Right.
But again, that system where we're on Netflix, I'm like, I watched a movie that happened to have Neil Patrick Harris in it. And I enjoyed that movie, doesn't mean that I particularly want to look at a list of all of Neil Patrick Harris's other films.
But Amazon is able – like this is where Amazon has the big advantage because they sell everything. They can look at much more holistically. So it can say, okay, I like Neal Stephenson and I like William Gibson. So I'm probably also going to like something that I'm not able
Blade
to
pull Runner.
Any. Yeah, Blade Runner. Exactly.
Right.
Neal Stephenson commented on my Google Plus thread today.
That's cool.
Power of
real
the internet.
Neal Stephenson.
I presume it was the real one.
It's a fairly common name. Did he have an awesome beard?
Yeah, and you go to his page and it's him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there verified on
he's
Google
not,
Plus?
Yes, because I am. He's not. So it could be a faker, yeah, but I think it was the real guy.
Okay. That's very cool.
I think Bill, which is interesting about sort of the patterns on Amazon, because it's not even just I like these two book authors, therefore I like this movie. It's he's bought all this other crap, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, he's bought all this, I don't know what it could be, camera gear, right?
Yeah.
And so that applies to maybe he likes good cinematographers, and so we'll pop up all the guys who have won awards in cinematography.
Yeah, that's absolutely cool. And again, the more holistic, the more data you can draw on, the more accurate you can make it. But again, it still feels like there are ways off from it being really useful. I honestly can't remember the last time that I sampled something based on one of these automated recommendations that I was actually like, I'm really glad they recommended that.
So when you go to Amazon, when it says, hey, people who bought this might also buy this, and it gives you the 2% off, 5% off of if you buy the two things together?
Yeah, it's very rare that I see anything.
Oh, see the percentage
that's
off?
A good pair.
I never get the percentage off.
It doesn't tell you the percentage off.
Usually if you buy the two things together, you get a discount. Yeah.
Speaking of which, buying behavior and refunds and partial refunds and stuff like that. So you know how you buy something, you pre-order something on Amazon. It could be anything, right?
Yeah.
And they say, here's our price guarantee, right?
Yes.
And then they ship it to you, and then a day later you get some amount of money back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 39 cents usually. Yes.
Well, it's interesting. Yesterday I got a refund I ordered Battlefield 3.
Uh-huh.
I got $10. I said, cool, $10. And then I tweeted that, and some guy said, I got 40 cents. So I'm kind of curious as to whether people are actually getting differential amounts based on
– depends on when they buy it.
Depends on the price of what you bought it.
Because the pre-order price changes.
They're going to refund the difference to you
based on the lowest price between
what you paid for it and then the lowest price that subsequently becomes available.
But there's a lot of trust involved with this because this is something they could screw you on constantly.
You know that Amazon has variable pricing too, right?
Right.
You can even bring up two different browsers for the same thing.
Well,
prices.
I don't know they still do that anymore. They used to. I know people got in an uproar about it.
No, I think they said this is the way we do business. This is what we test everything.
Right.
Wow. So let's
keep on refreshing.
Let's hit the last couple of news items. Microsoft Vision of the Future video. I missed this one too. What is this?
Came out this morning. It's like that really popular Microsoft video. That came out.
It's the
HoloDesk
thing, right?
This is their new version of that. Basically, productivity. How we're going to live in the future. You're going to walk.
Oh, it's this thing.
You're going to walk out of an airport, going to put on glasses, and it's going to translate everything right in the glasses.
Oh, remember when Word Lens came out and we were talking about
Oh my God!
So excited that was going
to
be the future.
Teach me to Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
Make me Spanish. It's stuff like that. And like, you know, you get in a cab and it'll tell you, right, because it'll know who you are in the cab and have all your appointments. You can see the panes on the cab windows will tell, augment reality. Like, this is where your meeting is going to be. This is your hotel. Like, that kind of stuff.
Can you put in preferences? Like, I don't like talking to cab drivers, or I do like talking to cab drivers?
That was not in the video.
Well, maybe for you, Will, it could pixelate out everyone from other races.
It's definitely perfect.
Just not those, you only see white people.
Why am I racist? Because of the Tom and Jerry thing?
Color filter everything.
I don't like this implication.
The video is fun to watch. It's definitely like a Minority Report style. You know, here's what the feature could look like. Obviously, Everything is still Microsoft branded. Like, they're still using their curved keyboards. And people are kind of bitching, oh, you know, this is the problem with Microsoft. They make these cool videos, but they never actually do this stuff.
Right.
Or they do it and then they kill it before it comes out.
Right. It's never actually consumer product.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you can go all the way back to those World's Fairs, right, where they had those visions of the future. And the future never turns out the way they imagined it.
Yeah. But it's cool to imagine. It sparks imagination. I like to think about how they shot these videos, because obviously all green screen and the actors like are just actors. Like, so is a casting director, okay, you're going to touch this part of the screen and it's going to do this? Like, how is that scripted?
Yeah,
it's
no different than any Hollywood movie.
Because they do it actually very slowly.
Tom Cruise is doing this in Minority Report, there's not really images.
Tom, you got to imagine the future.
Well, Tom Cruise is very method about that stuff. He went to the future in his head and was – you know, it was like the kid in the Odyssey Quest.
That motherfucker is method. Did you see that behind the scenes Khalifa thing? Yeah. Oh my god!
I'm sure. Okay, he actually went outside the window, but I don't think he did all the stunts.
But even the amount that he did, I'm like, that's more than I would do.
Like, I'm going to go see that movie as a result of that video, because I was like, if the dude's hanging off the,
I can't even imagine the insurance issues involved.
Right.
The fact, if you're the guy that's hooking him up on the rig, you're like, fuck, I better triple check this shit.
Well, and also the fact that the guy that's in charge has only done animated stuff in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I love the animated stuff he's done. But
again, he's used to a world where characters can fall off a 100-story building and they're back in the next shot.
Hit him on the head with an anvil three times and let's see how it goes.
No, he really does die if this happens in live action.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
It looked like they were using steel cable, though, for that.
Yeah, the best part of that shot is when Brad Bird says, okay, Tom, I'm going to do that again. The shot was great. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, no problem.
I don't care what the cable is made out of or how much I've yanked on it to make sure that it's okay. I ain't jumping out of the fucking Burj Khalifa.
Do you think that after the second, like after you've been out there for a few minutes, the adrenaline wears off and it's just like, okay, I'm really cold.
I think it might be the roller coaster or the karaoke effect where the first time you're absolutely terrified, but as soon as you do it, you're like, I want to do that again.
Yeah.
Sure. Once you know that you're not going to die.
Did you see this video, Lloyd?
No.
So Tom Cruise, basically it's this, you know, the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world,
right,
was one of the centerpieces for
the trailer.
You've seen the trailer. Yeah, right. So he sits on top of the building and jumps off or whatever.
I like we haven't named the movie yet. It's good.
Yeah, well, they
– Don't shill
no
for Hollywood.
Free marketing?
No. Yeah. It's a movie. It's coming out, directed by Brad Bird, starring Tom Cruise.
Yeah, with Tom Cruise and buildings in Dubai.
Yeah.
And basically, there's this whole behind-the-scenes video. It's like a DVD extra thing that shows him running up and down the side of the building and around the side of the building, rappelling. And it's, you know, half mile up in the air on the side of a building.
And it's clearly actually him doing it. And it's like, that's pretty impressive.
Dudes, somebody has to clean those windows, though. I mean, do you think the window washers for that building are like –
robots.
Oh, really? They use robots?
Oh, yeah. Oh. No, actually, a lot of them do.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, when it's that high up, I don't think...
It actually becomes quite dangerous with winds and stuff.
Yeah.
Back when I was a window washer.
But yeah, but I think in the earlier Mission Impossible, he was actually hanging off those rocks as well.
Yeah, he likes
doing his own stunts.
That behind the thing John in Wu Mission... One. That's the best part of Mission Impossible, too.
Yeah, it's a shame it's right at the beginning.
That when they changed the tires on the motorcycle.
All downhill from there in Mission
Street
Impossible.
Street tires. Dirt bike tires. Street tires. Dirt bike tires. I don't know how that happens. It's magical.
The guy is an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
Should we talk about what we've been testing?
Okay.
As previously mentioned, I've been testing the Galaxy S2 this week, or for the last several weeks, actually. It's a nice phone.
Is that the flagship currently, short of the Galaxy Nexus coming out?
Had that phone come out in March or April like it did in the EU, it would have been the phone to beat for most of 2011, I think, in the US. It still runs TouchWiz, but TouchWiz is significantly improved. I fundamentally don't like those third party. I mean, this is old territory.
Yeah, we've done this many times before.
It's a solid phone. It's a dual core fast phone. The screen's gorgeous. It's a big AMOLED screen.
Yeah.
It's thin enough. It fits in your pocket. You don't realize the phone is as big as it is when you're carrying it around.
Right.
It's relatively easy to root and install Cyanogen on, although I've been having trouble with that since I've been trying to do it on a Mac the last couple of days. You know, it's a nice phone.
I enjoyed Norm's camera test was good. Yeah. I liked that.
Yeah, so Norm, this is a good segue. Norm tested cameras on the Galaxy S2, the 4, and iPhone 4, and the 4S.
Yeah,
and the results were interesting. Well, but it was kind of unexpected.
No, Galaxy S2 did very well.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was
outdoors did very well.
Low light, it didn't do well, but otherwise, it looked great.
Yeah, it seems like the place that a lot of phones fall down is when you're doing low light or with a flash, and yeah.
Low light's constantly a problem.
On the Galaxy S2 and other Android phones, there's metering, so you can change the exposure on the phones. I don't know if I want to do that on.
I don't want to have to do that manually.
On a,
I want to tap something that I want to be exposed. Yeah, right?
I mean, shooting in low light with those tiny sensors, there's just physical limitations.
The cameras on those phones are close enough that they're not going to be the deciding factor on what phone you get. Right, there are other things that are probably there's more disparity.
Well,
between these phones,
you know, it's funny because this is one of the things they touched on during the Nokia keynote. But the flash algorithms make a huge difference. So if you're using the flash on these phones, if they don't pulse it right, then you look super blown out and Caspery. And it's not right. not a good look.
Yeah, the flash on the Galaxy 2 didn't look as good as the iPhone flash effect.
It's never good, the Android flash phones, it seems like. Nokia said they did a lot of work with that to make sure that the flash fired well and the pictures looked nice. The review is up on the site. It's hard to recommend that phone with the Galaxy Nexus just around the corner.
Right around the corner.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate for Samsung.
Didn't I see in the news that that's going to be exclusive to Verizon at launch?
That is Nexus? The rumor, yeah.
Galaxy
Have they confirmed
Nexus?
That?
Not surprised at all.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
For how long S2. That's going to be the case, that, who knows?
The question is – well, the other thing that Ryan Whitman, our Android guy, pointed out is that the you'll be able to buy the HSPA Plus version international unlocked on day one if you pay full price.
But I know Verizon people are very excited because it's the first time that a Nexus phone has been available on their carrier.
And Verizon is still, I think, I associate Verizon with Android as carriers go right now. So, I mean, I know Sprint has had a lot of good Android phones as well, but Verizon has had a massive selection of Android phones.
Well, yeah, and that's interesting because, you know, they connected themselves to the whole Motorola Droid thing and became kind of the flagship partner for them.
Right.
But the reality
is the Droid is a Verizon brand, not
right. That's
Motorola
what I'm saying.
Brand.
So that's obviously they were deeply connected. Verizon's been deeply connected to Android from day one.
Right.
But so ironically, Verizon's the one that you haven't been able to get the Nexus phone, which is actually the best Android phone. And now you will be able
It's going to be interesting to see if that continues now that they have the iPhone. Because I felt like that attachment to Android early on was a necessity, not necessarily.
I think if you're a carrier, you can't play favorites and say, "Well, we're going to be the iPhone carrier, or we're going to be the Android carrier." You've got to offer all.
I think in a practical sense, and what a customer is going to gravitate to, I think that's probably correct.
Yeah, I mean, AT&T has done a really nice job of ignoring Android for the last 2 years. If you look at the Android,
they have some Android phones, don't they?
They do, but it's always afterthoughts and you know.
Well, they're having enough problem with iPhone coverage anyway. Like,
I'm not going to get into that again. iPhone 4S testing continues. Gary, what are you thinking? How are you feel? Did you get an iPhone 4S, Lloyd? Are you still?
Nope.
Are you 4?
I'm just waiting for my contract to expire. Okay. I don't buy phones at full price.
It's a good policy.
It's a smart move. I'm still loving it.
Okay.
Really, really enjoying it. Leah got hers finally. Okay. She had to wait a week.
She got white or black?
She got white, and through the reservation system, you know, she did the thing where you reserve it at 9 o'clock the night before, and you go and get it the next day. It looks like that's finally calming down now. I think you can actually walk into a store and probably get one.
Yeah, Drew did one, no problem.
She's really loving it. She loves Siri. She's using it a lot, which I thought was surprising. She doesn't strike me as the kind of person that would feel comfortable talking to her phone, but she's getting a lot of use out of it. Mm-hmm. I'm loving Siri when it works. I don't like the fact that it has to be constantly connected to the network. Even for the most basic things like playing a playlist, if it can't connect to the network, it can't do that.
Yeah.
I find that very frustrating. So I'm kind of ambivalent on Siri. When it works, I love it. It's wonderful. When it doesn't work, it's extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
So it kind of blows hot and cold. But, you know, I can only assume it's going to get better as they continue to fix it.
Is Siri doing any offline processing, or is it all on the phone?
It's all on the phone. So all of the interesting voice stuff happens is bumping up to
the connection, the constant connection is not a not offloading some of the processing to the cloud or something like that.
No, it is offloading to the cloud.
Yeah.
It's also doing it for authorization. Apple has to authorize that it's coming from a 4S to prevent people hacking onto other phones.
Yeah, which I think is kind of bogus. I think Siri is really interesting. I would find it infinitely I use it primarily in the car.
Yeah, me
it
too.
Would be infinitely more useful if it if iPhone had turn by turn nav.
When I was driving to LA last week, I got a text. Okay, let's try this. Let's see how it works. And I've got the Bluetooth, so you just hit the little button on your ear. Mm-hmm. Siri, read me my text, and she reads the whole text, and it sounded very natural, very good. I said reply, dictated the reply. She nailed it the first time. Boom. That's when it works.
Yeah.
When it doesn't work is when I say play my current playlist and it says can't get to the network. My old voice control on my iPhone 4 could do that without having to go to the cloud. Yeah. Why does it now have to be more complicated? So it's still a mixed bag.
If you turn off Siri, do you get the old voice control back?
No.
No, I don't believe you do.
Oh, that sucks.
I'm not sure about that. We should check that. I realized I forgot to talk about a couple of things with the Nokia stuff and with the Galaxy S2. So Nokia is doing a couple of apps, including a voice-guided nav app called Nokia Drive, I think. So turn-by-turn nav will be built into this phone on the Nokia Lumia 800 and 710. And then the other thing I tested on the Galaxy S is it's integrated with Vlingo, which is – I don't want to say it's Android's answer to Siri, but it's because it's been around for a lot longer than that. But it is – better than the default Google voice control.
Vlingo?
V-L-I-N-G-O. I think you can download it as an app as well. It's not as good as Siri. Basically, all of these people were giving us a lot of grief about talking about Siri, and the Android experience is dramatically different from the way Siri works.
Right.
Just because you can give – Siri understands 15 commands to do one thing. So if you say, I need to send a text, I'd like to send a text, send a text to so-and-so, the natural language parsing, whether they're actually naturally language parsing or just looking for the 50 different constructions that people use to say, hey, I need to send a text, it's much more effective and doesn't require you to learn send message to – who should I send a message to? Dave Snyder. And then do you want to send a text or an email? It's a completely different experience.
Yeah, so it cuts through all that.
Yeah, and much better.
And I'm going to be fascinated to see what Siri looks like in a couple of years as they continue to evolve it and they're looking at the way people actually use it and, you know, making it more,
still in beta.
Yeah?
I think it's just in beta because of languages though, right?
It's only going to get better though.
Right.
But yeah, I've had great experiences with it and really frustrating experiences with it. Like I had to rename one of my playlists.
Uh-huh.
I have a playlist on my phone.
You have a road trip playlist?
No, well, I do, but not currently. But I have a playlist that's just called Current, which is just whatever music, you know, I'm interested that I like that week or I just want to have available, you know, whatever the new music that I'm liking, like whatever's in my current rotation just goes into that playlist. But when I would say playlist Current to Siri, she has trouble understanding that word in my accent. So I changed the name of the playlist to something that would be easier for her to not get confused about.
Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah. I didn't want to have to do it, but I did it. And now it works fine.
So when you disable Siri, it does default back to voice control, the old school voice control.
Oh, it does?
It's weird to me that doesn't happen automatically when you're not having network coverage.
Right.
The thing that bums me out is because I use RDO, I don't get voice control over music. So I've had to put some music on my phone to test that stuff out.
Right.
Lloyd, you've been playing some Battlefield 3.
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I've been trying to play it. Now, so Battlefield 3 has been a really frustrating experience, actually, because your recommendation.
I love it. I don't love the screen protector. What's
word
that
picture.
From?
No, this is actually my picture, but anyway.
Oh,
word
okay.
picture. Paint a word picture.
But, well, look, I can hold it up to the camera as well. I might get one of these now.
What is it that you are looking at?
Lloyd has the ThinkGeek Starfleet iPhone case. It's the science officer one.
Oh, okay. Is it metal or is it plastic?
Plastic.
Okay. It looks really metallic.
Is it easy to pop the phone in
it
and
really
out of
easy.
That?
Really easy.
So that makes it a little thicker than the in-case.
Yeah. Doesn't add a lot of bulk.
No.
It doesn't have the lip that the in-case case has, right. Which I like.
But it's got that cool – it's got the cool factor, right? It's got the Starfleet.
Right.
I like it.
Right. And you get the science officer one.
Of course.
I approve. I'm kind of tempted by Mirror Universe just because it's the most fucked up one. That would look great with the white iPhone.
Yeah, but and this is why you can go away, is that I will be getting the Command Yellow Kirk one, which goes better with black.
That is true.
Because that's actually okay. The color that would go with it.
Command anyway, would go better with
good
black.
Good thing everybody here is
back to Battlefield 3.
Relationships. Yeah. So you've been playing your PC, obviously.
Yep. So I'm disappointed in, well, first of all, the whole Origin, you know what Origin is, right? Origin is the download client.
It's Steam
now,
for
right?
EA.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you why you got your copy from Amazon and didn't do the digital thing.
Because I got $10 off.
Okay.
Anyway, my experience with physical copies from Amazon has been very good in terms of you actually end up paying less than retail a lot of times. Although right. after the fact.
Or you get the $20 code or whatever. Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so I got it, installed it. What's really interesting is although it installed off a DVD-ROM, it was actually slower than my download speed, which I thought was quite funny.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm sure it was unpacking some compressor. Yeah. Anyway, the fact that you actually launched the game from a web browser that requires a special plugin, first of all, is beyond stupid.
Is that really the only way you can launch
it? For multiplayer.
That's right. No. It's
even
campaign.
Single player?
Campaign, yeah.
Does it?
So there's no just like a desktop shortcut?
The desktop shortcut launches the browser.
It launches the browser.
Like their browser or your browser?
Your web browser. You go to their website and it's, you know, it's got a little button that says campaign, like EA, multiplayer, co-op.
It works like their free Flash web
games. Yes.
Right. What is the purpose of that?
One guy told me that the actual server browser when you're doing multiplayer browsing is a little more robust than in-game. But, you know, to me that's kind of like having to do that is kind of beyond dumb, especially since it requires a special plugin. I mean, just.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, who knows what else that thing's doing.
And then on top of that, so there's no ability currently. I'm suspecting this will be patched in later. But right now you can't have a personal server or private server unless you buy time on a server.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
like from gameservers.com or
right,
something
like
right.
that. Yep. You can't so that lets a lot of people. There's no LAN, of course.
Oh, no, naturally.
Yeah, right. Which I don't have a problem.
Because who would want to play this game at a LAN party?
Right. But well,
it's
I don't have
too
a
big
problem.
A game
we,
for
we
LAN
play
parties.
In our, sort of the LAN parties we have at my house fairly frequently, we play games that are only internet only, right? That's okay to me, just as long as you have control. There's a lot of lack of control of the servers. You can join a server and do stuff, but it's very limited in terms of you can't, you know, you have to, like, let's say you want to play a particular map. You search for that map, and then you search for the game mode they're playing on the map, and it's like, you know, you have to do all the stuff through the search, you know, and you can sort of create customized searches.
Did you play Bad Company or Bad Company 2 at all?
No.
Okay.
No.
I played a little bit of those, and the in-game server browser in those was. Well, Battlefield in server browsers has always been kind of bad.
Right.
I don't think 1942 even had one, but I can't remember.
See, especially in games like this with these kind of Twitch games, being able to control the experience is so critical these days if you want to have fun. Like, even if I can get a dozen of my friends together, I don't want to jump into a 24-player server and meet a dozen random motherfuckers that are just going to kill me every 5 seconds.
Well, and have half of your friends on one team and half of your friends on the other.
Right. Yeah.
Party
yeah.
system.
Yeah, I mean, the control for the server in Battlefield 2 was much finer.
Well, yeah. You could just download that server executable and run it on a machine, too.
Right.
I mean, those were the good old days.
Yes, right.
But no even, voice chat also in-game?
I mean, even Gears of War 3 lets me set up a private game, and that's on a console-only game.
Let's talk about single player. Within the first 5 minutes of single player, there were a dozen QuickTime events.
Oh, yeah, but we watched Jeff play.
It's are you kidding? This is a modern game, really?
But single player is really in these games. It's really kind of an afterthought.
It's disc 2.
Yeah, the Xbox, the multiplayer is disc 1, and the single player is disc 2.
But I mean, just having all those QuickTime events. I mean, and beyond all the stuff that they're trying to copy off of Modern Warfare, it's like just the QTEs are just.
Well, the weird thing is, you know, DICE can make good single player games because Mirror's Edge was rad,
right?
It was, but it was really frustrating as well.
Only if you were bad.
Well, I
mean, it's a hard game. It's not for you, Gary.
It's very merciless.
You shouldn't play Dark Souls either.
I love the fact that there's a Twitter account that's just called Why Dark Souls Why, which is just all about all the awful things that Dark Souls will do to you.
Well, I don't want to talk about games too much, but I've been playing Dark Souls, and it's basically a single-player MMO, which is what I like about it. There's no gates keeping you out of areas you shouldn't be in at low levels or anything like that. The only gate is, do you go someplace and shit kills you immediately? And sometimes that's because you're not supposed to be there yet, and sometimes it's just because the game is really hard.
Yeah. It's an interesting design philosophy.
It's fascinating.
I agree.
I'm sucked
in. And hardcore players love it, right? They love that punishing
element. That's not what it's about. For me, but we can talk. We should talk about that not in the podcast.
Anyway, after fooling around with Battlefield 3, I went back and started playing Space Marine again.
Yeah, I like Space Marine's multiplayer a lot. I thought it was a much better game than people gave it credit for.
I am still going to get Battlefield 3.
Even the single player is a hoot.
Yeah.
I want to play it.
I like to chainsaw sword orcs. I mean, that never gets old.
The way it's going to work for me, I think, is Modern Warfare 3 single-player campaign, Battlefield 3 multiplayer. That's going to be my strategy.
If you told me there would be a day when I didn't go out and buy a Battlefield, like a core, not that bad company bullshit, but a core Battlefield game on day one, I would have punched you in the face a year ago.
And I'm the exact opposite, because this is actually going to be the first Battlefield game that I
you're not want to get into.
I bought Bad Company 2, which I didn't like.
Single player was not that great.
You're not going to like Battlefield 3, I don't think.
Why not?
If you never played Battlefield multiplayer before?
I think I played one of the early ones.
Probably it's not called
which is completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different. But, you know, for what it's worth, I mean, for all my bitching about sort of all the multiplayer crap, what it is good at, the experience is good at, is if you're playing on ranked servers and, you know, you want to do the whole leveling up thing, that actually is pretty cool.
The metagame.
Well. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm almost metagamed out at this point. I played a lot of Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2. I put a fair number of hours into COD Blops.
Right.
And I just I don't want to play for 10 hours to unlock the P90 again.
Right.
I just want to have the P90 and I want to go have fun.
You know, they're building that sort of –
Really?
Oh, God.
They're kind of building that idea into Mass Effect 3 to a limited extent, you know?
That's what I had heard, yeah. I haven't seen
it's not as grotesquely obvious as it is with, like, Battlefield 3 or anything like that.
Right.
What you do is the multiplayer mode, you play co-op with your friends, and it's basically sort of like the tower defense, it's castle defense. You're defending against endless horde of enemies.
Horde mode.
And yes, right.
Yes.
Right, right. But you're also doing stuff, right? You're also doing stuff.
So there's objectives as well.
Right, right. And while you're doing this stuff, and so that translates to stuff that it gives you in the single player game that are not required, but are just like little perks.
I don't quite get why the co-op in the campaign co-op in Mass Effect 3 isn't just the core game like it is in the Gears of War games.
Would be awesome.
It's hard to do.
Why don't they do that? But it's already a party system.
It's already three players.
Why can't they just give one of the NPCs
one person would have to be the lead player and get all the conversations.
Three shepherds. The three moon shepherd.
No, but I mean, I can be Miranda three or whatever, and you can be.
But your experience in the
I don't
co-op
want to be Miranda.
Is, you have to watch the conversations and they get
right,
the choices.
There would be a disparity there. That's right.
Well, remember, I don't know if you guys ever went going back to the old days of BioWare, you know, Baldur's Gate and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was whoever got to the person first got the conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
That was weird. But that's not a good experience.
Yeah. No, I'm noting that ironically, with any reason.
I love those co-op kind of games. Like, what was it, Freelancer?
The
last Origin game, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you could just set up a persistent server.
Yes.
That you ran, and it wasn't a huge bandwidth game, so I ran it on a DSL connection. Nobody complained. And like people just came into this world.
There are still freelancer servers out
there.
Yeah.
Like, and when they shut down, you can migrate the files over and have someone else host all your
world.
You just
send the directory over. I would love to have more games that are like that, like RPG kind of like.
Well, mini MMOs.
Mini MMOs. I would love to be able to run a Torchlight server, which I think is part of their plan, and just have a world that if you guys want to pop in and then I can join. We have 20 or 30 people that play on the server at any given time. Like, that is something I would pay to host a server for.
Minecraft, but with weapons.
Minecraft, but with a game. Right. I mean, and Minecraft has a game. They're putting a game in now. But yeah, I want Minecraft with a game. I think that would be rad. Anything else people are testing?
I got an opportunity this week to test something that I've been kind of orbiting and considering. And I'm having played with it, I'm really, really this close to pulling the trigger. A friend of mine in LA has one of these Verizon LTE MiFi hotspots, which I just love. Like, it's going to solve a whole bunch of problems for me. Like, I was in LA, and every time I go to LA, I stay at a hotel, and I'm always always a lottery. Like,
$10 a month.
Is the Wi-Fi going to be any good? Is it free? Sometimes it's Ethernet only. It's no good on my MacBook Air or for any of my wireless devices. I'm like, and sometimes you get the free Wi-Fi, but it sucks. Right? Hotel Wi-Fi is generally
or you're just
shitty.
Like, sometimes it's good in one room and bad in the room across the corner.
I'm actually at a point now where if I stay at a hotel regularly, I ask to be put in specific rooms because I know that the signal's better.
You Hollywood types, man.
Well, because
do you only ask for green M&Ms?
So I'm actually amazed that when they do hotel rankings on hotels.com or whatever, that the quality of the Wi-Fi experience, not just Wi-Fi yes or no, like do you have it? Because I actually would like to know how good it is because that's a big determinant of where I'm going to stay.
Are they blocking pornography on the router or whatever?
Anyway, the point being that all goes out of the window when you have this little device, this thing that's like the size of a deck of cards, put it down anywhere, and you've got basically Wi-Fi. Because 4G, when it's getting a signal, is basically as good as regular Wi-Fi.
You can play Left 4 Dead on
But you're okay
4G,
paying double the data plan.
So the plan is, so it's $50 a month for the device. And then you've got to pay $50 a month for 5 gigs of data every month on a 2-year contract.
Wait, so no, it for $50 a month? What?
That's not. It's cheaper than that. It's $50 a month. You pay for it. You pay $200 for the device.
No, you pay $50 for the device.
$50 I was just one at time. The
store. Oh, okay, okay.
You pay $50 for the device on a 2-year contract, or you can pay $280 for it off contract.
Yeah, and then you just turn it on and off when you need it. You travel to LA enough, it's probably
right. So I would probably use enough hit, but the problem is you got to get it on a 2-year contract. And I'm thinking, you know what? A year from now, we're probably going to see an LTE iPhone on Verizon. I'm not going to need this thing anymore. I'll just hotspot that.
And
no, because it actually worked out cheaper to get it on contract and then kill the contract after a year. We did the math in the store.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking about getting it. Like you plug it into your car, right? And you've got a Wi-Fi cloud in your car.
Your car has internet, basically.
And I like the idea of being that guy, right? Almost like on a Mentos commercial, where like at an airport, someone says, "Ah, fuck, I really need to send this thing." He's like, "How about some free Wi-Fi?" Boop. And you just solve everyone's problems. You create Wi-Fi halo for everyone to enjoy. That's fantastic.
When I used to have a Wi-Fi and for work, and I just would leave it in the car, plugged into the cigarette charger in the glove box.
Brilliant.
And it was awesome because I had like I think that people would follow me though because I left it unencrypted so people could just connect unless I was in an
event. Oh, no, it would be encrypted online.
Well, but I think people were like following me as they're driving down the freeway, you know, like chasing the Wi-Fi.
Okay, you got to stay with them. Yeah. It's like in GTA. You're getting too far away.
Yeah, stay close.
You should have a sign. Tell you like request not money, but like special things. Well, somebody give you my Wi-Fi.
Somebody
password.
Did suggest that like again, if you could sell it. If someone's at an airport, it's like. I got a signal for you. $10.
Yeah, well, other stuff we've been testing. I got.
So that's it. There's no conversation there.
I thought we're good.
Well, I mean, do you recommend them? Do you think they're good?
Yeah, I think they're super awesome.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it.
Super fantastic.
Yeah,
they're expensive, but
data's expensive, but the device is pretty.
The thing is, the math really works out if you spend more than 4 or 5 nights a month in a hotel room.
Right.
Can I sort of tease something?
Yeah,
you can
absolutely.
Talk about it like next time I'm here.
Yeah.
I got a giant box from Intel on my porch the other day.
Okay.
I can't talk about it.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I didn't realize it was going to be that vague.
Wow, that was – at least it was from Intel.
Well, yes. It's their next gen processor stuff.
So. Ooh. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
The last thing I was going to say is we got a coffee machine in. You bought that awful Nespresso thing a few weeks ago. after we had that conversation, a bunch of people said, hey, there's this pump-driven Mr. Coffee espresso machine that's $80.
Yeah.
And people quite like it.
Get it at Target.
So I went to Target and bought an $80 espresso machine. Thought, oh, God, this is going to be terrible. It was much less bad than I expected. It's still not.
Wow. Who would have thought that your preconceptions about coffee might actually turn out to be wrong?
Hard to believe.
Although we did use a $500 grinder.
When you pair it with a $500 grinder, it makes amazing espresso for an $80 machine.
Yeah. Right.
When you put it with the oval blade grinder, not so good.
Yeah.
And frothing milk is not the most pleasant experience.
Frothing milk.
Does it froth the milk?
It has a rubber. It has a blaster, yeah.
Oh, right. One of those rubber
particularly
things.
Particularly good.
Rubber penis that you put in
the
milk.
The rubber penis made a horrible. Do you take that thing off of your Nespresso and clean out underneath it?
Mine doesn't work like that.
Oh, you have
a. Mine is a separate thing that looks like a mini kettle. That sits on its own base,
and then
pour the milk into that, and put a lid on, and there's a little whisk that goes around inside.
Oh, so it's just whipping the milk, not steaming it.
No, it will steam it as well. You can turn it on either hot or cold.
Is there steam?
Well, it's not steam.
Where does the steam come from?
There's a heating element. The milk gets
well, so then it's not steaming it; it's heating it and frothing it.
Yeah, I guess.
Can I ask while I'm here? Then can I ask an opinion about a particular? I'm not sure what the style is. Probably pour over is right. So the Mocha Master. Do you know this?
I've seen it, but I haven't used it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'm curious. A lot of people rave over it.
People really like it a lot. I've sat and ordered, been ready to order, and I just haven't done it yet.
Okay.
We only do coffee stuff every 2 weeks because people complain if we do it more often. So I have 26 slots a year. It turns out, but yeah, it's either that or the vermiform or verna. I don't know. It's some. It sounds like a type of worm.
Yes, right. But that's the Mocha Master. That's who makes it.
Yeah. Mark Prince at Coffee Geek, who's the guy I call when I have coffee questions, says that it's pretty good, but he thinks it's overpriced. The thing that I like more than anything else right now is the Chemex with the Able brewing cone. It's a stainless steel cone with a lot of little holes. Right. The only thing
But that's like an even more tediously manual process than the AeroPress.
Maybe I guess if you want to look at it that way, yeah, it's basically 5 minutes of work for a really amazing cup of coffee, and I fill up my thing and drink it most of the day. So,
this is an interesting story that's kind of tech related. Apparently, British police in scouring the News International
offices.
Were we
so boring you had to look at the phone? Is that what happened?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Anytime you go into coffee snob mode, I start to tune out these days. So I was looking at the news, and apparently the British police, in searching the News International offices in relation to the phone hacking scandal, have found what is
naked believed, pictures of Rupert Murdoch.
Well, they found what they believe to be the smoking phone. The cell phone that was actually used to hack into these things.
You'd think that's the first thing they would have gotten rid of.
Apparently, it was locked away in an office somewhere. Yeah, they found it. So that could end up being a big
You saw the Steve Jobs quote that I tweeted, right?
No. Talking to Rupert Murdoch about Fox News.
Steve Jobs said Rupert Murdoch, Fox News is a destructive influence on society.
I would agree with that.
Well, I thought it was really interesting the way that he viewed the world. He was saying that it's not about – the world is polarized, but not in terms of left and right politically, but in terms of constructive and destructive.
Yeah.
And I guess he views liberal progressive politics as constructive and right-wing fear politics as destructive.
But the way I've always looked at it
– I would buy into that.
You're either fighting entropy or you're not.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I like to fight entropy.
I'm a big believer in entropy. It's kind of depressing that the one constant inviolable force in the universe is just degradation and rot, right? That's basically what entropy is.
As long as you have energy input, that's not true.
Yeah. You just got to keep fighting it, man.
Well, I can eat as many energy bars as I want, but I'm still going to grow old and die.
But it's what you do in the interim that matters.
I guess.
It's got kind of spiritual.
Well, you can fight entropy. You can battle it and force it for as long as possible, but it's ultimately always going to win in the grand scheme of things.
Well, I suppose 13 billion years from now we'll have the heat death of the universe, but I'm not really very worried about that.
Yeah, I feel like we'll have a problem.
But why can't we live in a world where we have reverse entropy, where things are just getting better and cooler?
That might happen after the heat death of the universe. Who knows?
Maybe so. Maybe we'll just start over.
Big shrink.
No, I thought that was interesting, and I agree with that political view that I think that Fox News is a destructive force in the universe.
It's good. I'm just glad we're talking about politics.
Hey, HP's keeping their PC division.
That's
big news.
Not only playing to the existing
today
fear and ignorance that is prevalent in our society, but actually contributing to it.
So Meg Whitman just put her foot down and said, hey, PCs are still a thing?
They are stronger together.
Oh, good. That's good. Actually, that's good news.
That's really good news.
Personal systems group, not going away.
That's good.
Darren will be happy. Anything else we want to talk about what we've been testing? Lloyd, Norm, Gary? Okay.
Nope.
I'm going to play some music. We don't have time to answer questions again because we're windbags. But
I like that you cut yourself off.
My finger slipped.
Okay.
So, thanks for coming by again, everybody. Norman Chan, Gary Whitta. Lloyd Case, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Right.
We'll have you on at some point in the not-too-distant future again to talk about the thing that may not be named.
It's actually pretty cool.
I'm interested. Yeah. We'll have to have a conversation after the show.
Right.
This is only a test. We're on every Thursday. If you're a premium Whiskey Media member, you can watch us live. The camera's right there. Hi, guys. It's on – we usually record Thursday morning at 11, but watch the homepage of Tested and, everybody's Twitter feeds, and we usually update as soon as we know when people are going to be available to record the show. We're up every Thursday afternoon. Until next week, I'm Will. See you guys next time, and don't forget to stay tuned for Fake Outtakes.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested.
I love planets.
I love being on one.
Tested.
No. Outtakes of fakeness. We can't talk about Breaking Bad because Norman Chan is still behind.
I'm only behind one episode by you.
And you're still.
I'm better than him, though, so that's all.
There's only so much.
Will. If you put out,
no,
I will
no,
finish.
No, you have way more time.
I have way more free time over the weekend.
I know, but you don't have full access to your TV. Actually, neither of you do, right?
But no, but, well,
neither of you are masters of your domain.
I can watch on a laptop.
Neither are you.
That's true. It's only because I live in a multi-screen house,
right? So Gina hurt her back a few weeks ago, and she's been at home and has gone through all the TV I think she's ever wanted to watch, and she might be TV'd out. I don't know for sure. But I came in yesterday morning. I was making breakfast, and I came in. I was like, "That sounds like Claire Danes." She was watching My So-Called Life, which I had never watched before, and that is a surprisingly good TV show.
I was hoping you were going to say Homeland, which is this new show that's supposed to be really good that has Claire Danes in it.
Showtime, of course.
Yeah, I don't have Showtime.
They just renewed that. That's the one with what's his name from Banner Brothers.
Yes, it's supposed to be really, really good, but I don't have Showtime, so I've got to find some other way to try and see.
You know what show I'm excited for? It's a mid-season show on NBC. It's the Jason Isaacs show.
Awake. Yeah, they just had to shut that down.
Put on a hiatus, just to rewrite some of
it. Yeah, the one show I'm looking for starting this Friday is Grimm. Grimm looks interesting.
Oh, is it the fairy tale thing?
Yes. Oh, so there's two. Ooh. Remember, there's two TV shows based on fairy tales, one of which is not so good.
Okay.
But Grimm looks promising.
Once Upon a Time got huge ratings.
I know, but it's the pilot was a little.
Is that for children? Or what's the.
No, what, you know what I think that show is for? Is for people who grew up with Disney fairy tale characters.
Oh.
Okay.
It's not for kids necessarily, but you know, you grew up with that image of.
Yeah, the cleanified.
Right.
And who's in that one?
Yes. Who's in which one?
Once Upon a Time.
Isn't that Jennifer Morrison? And
yes, the one
from
who
House?
Left House. Right. She's the lead.
House is good this season as well, even though they're 8 seasons in.
It's weird. He's in prison or something.
Yeah. Well, he was in prison. He's out now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wait, so how deep are you into Breaking Bad?
I just finished the first season.
Okay,
and
I'm
one episode. I'm on the last episode of the first season.
Back now?
So you're basically right where you are.
I might marathon.
You're both in the same spot.
I might sit down and watch a whole season.
Will says he is technically
in
the lead.
Each season is better than the previous.
See, that's such a hard thing to do.
On Netflix, they only have 3 seasons. The fourth season is not on Netflix yet.
By the end of the third season, you will be torrenting, doing whatever you need to do to get that fourth season.
Trust me.
It's like the blue magic. It's like the blue meth. You got to have more.
We don't know what it's even called.
No, I saw that. I've got to that part.
Is he making the blue stuff?
Yeah. He made the blue stuff at the end of season one when he overpromised and couldn't get the Fedrin.
That's the key.
Jesus.
That's the key. The pseudo.
So
Heisenberg.
I think that Walter White would be the greatest Batman villain of all time.
There is a theory.
Why don't you be Walter White for Halloween? You just shave your head.
Well, there is a theory that once Walter shaves his head in Breaking Bad, that's like when Riker grows his beard.
Episode six, season one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's when he walks into the house.
He becomes more and more of a badass.
Yeah. When the moment he walks out and the wife and the kid are there and they're like. The reaction is so – that's such a fantastic reaction.
Have you had the whole Tuco storyline yet?
Which one's Tuco?
I'm guessing not if you don't recognize his name.
I don't know. I'm terrible with names on
TV
shows.
He's the first crazy-ass gangster that they try to sell.
Oh, yeah. No, we had Tuco.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that he walks across the street and goes in with the –
Yeah, the bag.
Yeah, the bag. The bag full of not glass.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I have now cut all of the season's premieres from my TV viewing. Terra Nova's done. I'm not watching that anymore. That's a complete waste
of time. I didn't watch any of the new shows.
The J.J. Abrams thing about the guy that has the NSA machine
Person of interest?
In the future.
Yeah.
That show's shit.
Really? So Terra Nova, you said it got off to a good start.
I said I was going to give it 3 episodes. I gave it 3 episodes. It continued to be shit, and I walked away.
Is Patrick even still watching that show? Because dinosaurs in it.
The dinosaurs are the worst part of that show.
Okay.
Yeah. Person of Interest, I thought, is an incredible failed opportunity.
It was such a good idea, and is just bad,
right?
Because it has a guy from Lost in it. I didn't watch Lost, so I don't know. But
who in Lost is in it? Is it the nerdy guy? Nerdy guy.
I don't know.
He was sort of Michael Emerson. He was the leader of the.
He looks like a squirrely kind of twitchy.
He plays good psychos.
Yeah,
he plays a good psycho. He was in The Practice as like the Hannibal Lecter character.
Yeah, the movie star TV shows, the sitcoms are bad. Cat Denning, terrible.
Unemployed Girls show.
I haven't watched any of those shows.
And the Zooey Deschanel one.
I think it's kind of funny. Like CBS this week is promoting its iPad app, its fall preview iPad app, in which you can preview shows that have already been canceled.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Let's see, what else? The thing with Sarah Michelle Gellar, my wife has been watching, that's awful.
Ringer.
Didn't get into that. It went fully idiotic within 3 episodes.
I watched the pilot episode. I don't get stars, but they made it available on demand. I watched the pilot episode of Boss, which is very interesting.
Yeah. They're promoting the hell out of
Kelsey Grammer. Is it about Bruce Springsteen?
No, it's Kelsey Grammer playing a mayor of Chicago. And it's basically, if you took the Tommy Carchetti strand from The Wire and made a show out of it, that's what this show would be.
How could Kelsey Grammer get elected to public office? He's such a smarmy asshole. There's no way it would work.
Well, no, because I think Kelsey Grammer is a fantastic dramatic actor.
Love Kelsey Grammer.
And he's often doesn't get that credit because he's usually obviously better known for playing comedic roles. Yeah. But he's very good in this, and there's a few scenes where he gets up on the podium and delivers these speeches to the crowd, and you're like, yeah, I'd vote for that guy. Like, he's very, very charismatic.
Is it? It's like the Matt Damon character in that Philip Dick adaptation.
Adjustment Bureau. Yeah, like that, like an older,
like an older, voted for that guy.
Yes, an older version, an older version. He's well, Kelsey Grammer is more like a bit more of the classic kind of smarmy politician, but like he delivers it in a way that you buy it.
Okay,
and but behind the scenes, he's a complete fucking nutcase,
lunatic.
Worth watching.
I want to watch another one because the pilot was really compelling, but also they did a few things. I'm like, what the fuck?
You can't ever tell from pilots.
Yeah, I need to watch another one, but I don't have Stars, and I don't know if they're making any others available.
Well, Stars
like
it'll be on Netflix, right?
You have Stars?
I don't have Stars.
Oh, wow, okay. I don't have Showtime, but I have Stars.
But I really want to watch Boss, and I really need to see if they've got any previews of Homeland on demand as well, because everyone's telling me that's
what's Homeland?
Homeland is Claire Danes is like a Homeland Security officer. And what's the name of the guy?
Is it 24 with Claire Danes?
Winters.
Kinda. So you remember Major Winters from Band of Brothers?
Yeah.
So he's a modern day army guy
okay.
who spent 7 years captured by Al Qaeda.
Oh, that's bad.
And they bring him back, and he gets released, and they bring him back. But now Claire Danes' suspicion is they've turned him into a sleeper agent.
Oh, so
and they
like don't know Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's supposed to be really good.
Okay.
I need to check that out.
That's on Stars too?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so none of your
no, that's on Showtime.
Showtime.
Okay. Yeah, that's on Showtime. So none of your new shows have survived.
The lesson here is I just need to watch less TV.
The X Factor is the only new show that I'm still watching.
The X Factor is.
But I know that you don't get into those shows.
I'm out of American Idol. I'm out of all the. I've decided I'm out of reality TV in general.
What do you guys watch at home?
Fringe is our big thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recorded. We usually watch it on Sundays rather than Fridays. But let's see.
Good policy.
New shows of. The show that we sort of like, and it's because more of my wife likes it, but it's kind of like light, kind of I can browse the internet on my iPad while I'm watching, is the one about the Unforgettable.
The cop that, whose superpower is right. that she never forgets anything.
Right, based on Mary Lou Hanna, who really has that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Poppy Montgomery.
Okay.
And then what's the other one? New show. Can't think of – no, most of the new shows are bombing.
Yeah. It hasn't been
Walking Dead's
season.
On
– I've been watching Walking Dead.
We're up to date on The Walking Dead. We watched the first two episodes.
We're there on the third now. The third came out on Sunday.
No, the third – second two so out. Far.
No, there's three.
No, there's
I'm
not.
Telling you, I watched the – hold on. Is the first episode when the horde comes down the street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then yeah, you're right. The mistake I made was I watched the last episode of the first season. Okay. Immediately preceding, sorry.
And that obviously has had mega, mega, mega ratings. They already already announced the third season. It's interesting. When Leah and I sit down to watch TV now, she'll often ask me or we'll ask ourselves, like, is this something that I should actually watch or can I have the laptop out for this
one? Well, yeah, that's exactly it.
Because some shows you kind of half watch and you've also got, like, this is the new way we experience things, right? So, like, The X Factor, I like The X Factor well enough, but it's not something I'm glued to. I'll have it on. It's my background screen and a foreground screen, and I'll go back and forth if it's a show. But if it's like The Walking Dead or House or a show that we watch every week, then you got to close the laptop and actually watch it.
Oh, see,
but it's interesting how we tier the shows that way now.
So the thing for me is the last couple of nights I've been watching the Occupy stuff out of Oakland on the laptop.
Oh my God, it's outrageous.
While the TV's on. And just because you can't do that on the iPad. None of the local news or Ustream or Justin TV live feed stuff works because it's all Flash-based. So,
right.
Which is a little bit of a bummer.
Do you find yourself doing that, though, either like really concentrating on a show or kind of half-watching it
the
with
only thing I actually watch anymore is Breaking Bad. Everything else, even Mad Men. At this
so when
point.
You say the second screen, is it your iPad or is it a Mac?
I've changed my system a little bit and found new because you know my iPad was kind of getting squeezed out a little bit between the MacBook and my iMac. I got the little dock for it, and now I just use the iPad as my nightstand, and so it's always there. That's where it charges overnight, and it's now my bed computer. Like when I wake up in the morning, like oh, I must have my data syringe. You know, you just grab the iPad off the thing. And my MacBook now stays downstairs as my couch computer because you can do more on it.
Yeah,
exactly. If I actually want to respond to an email or whatever, it's easier to bash it out.
I watch TV to get off the computer, but I'm still on the phone.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, even with no devices, I'm still pricking up the phone every 5 minutes. Again, though,
I don't want to be the one to suggest this, but perhaps we have a problem.
There's no perhaps about it. Do you engage in this kind of behavior?
Why do we see this as a problem? I don't see this as a problem.
Doesn't it just seem like it should be a problem?
Welcome to the future.
Yeah, I guess.
But isn't it a problem for like attention deficit or something? Like nothing can hold our attention anymore.
No, I have a ton of attention. I just look at the phone all day long.
We always see in fiction, you know, the bad guy that has the 50 screens.
Or Batman.
We are kind of Batman, the good man. We are. That's kind of where we're going. Instead of it being a wall of screens, we just have one screen in our hand, one over here, one here.
You know what we didn't talk about at all was Facebook's was Zuckerberg's new Arctic layer. The Facebook data servers. Yeah, they're putting it in the Arctic Circle because they have hydroelectric power and cooling, and he wants to have a secret ice layer.
That does sound very supervillainy.
Yeah, I mean that's the perfect cover, right? You dig out all.
He's
this
got
stuff.
The money. All you need is the money.
Yeah,
and the desire to be evil, which, based on Facebook, I presume he has that also.
Yes, he's just sitting there watching all the pictures come in.
Just invading everyone's privacy.
Look at all these status updates.
Just turning into person of interest guy, right? Written crazy billionaire with the ability to look at everyone's lives. Pretty if you were Zuckerberg, don't you think you would give yourself that power? It's like, yeah, privacy, everything. Yeah, they all get their privacy. But like, just me personally, because I'm Zuckerberg and I created the site.
He has a special
I get
key.
To look at anything I want. I've well, got full you know, access to everyone's profiles.
There used to be a master Facebook account that Facebook employees had access to.
Well, that's what I want. I want a skeleton key that gets me into everyone's Facebook.
And they could change anyone's profile and see what everyone else...
And just occasionally troll someone.
Yeah.
Just go right. Just change someone's Facebook update.
Yeah, you like doing that, posting Twitter updates for other people.
No, that's very immature. I would never do something like that.
No, definitely not.
But yeah, so they're building this big data. This is what everyone's doing, right? Yeah. Apple built this massive data center. Now Facebook's doing
this. This one's in Sweden or something? Scandinavia someplace?
You said it was in the Arctic Circle.
Well, hi, Gary. You're not American. You're supposed to be good at geography.
Sweden's in the Arctic Circle?
Yes.
Parts of it.
Parts of
really?
It.
Really? Yeah. No, I didn't know that.
Scandinavia is pretty far north, dude.
I guess so. When you think about the Arctic Circle, I'm actually thinking about the fucking Arctic, not like civilized places where people
right
live.
On the pole.
If you go,
a lonely polar bear and like that barbershop pole that says North Pole. Yeah. That's what I imagine when I think of the North
Santa's
pole.
Workshop.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and Santa's workshop runs on the North 10 pole. Meters around the pole.
Oh, of course. Right. Yeah,
that's the Arctic Circle. Right?
Yeah. I think that he's making an ice cave full of evil.
Why not? If I had $50 billion,
hey, it's just like James Bond.
Right.
Like that terrible James Bond movie, the ice city, and
which ice hotel. City? They had an ice hotel.
In the last... The last
Brosnan.
Yeah, the one with... what's her name?
Halle Berry.
Denise Richards.
No.
Yeah, whatever.
No, Halle Berry.
Oh, I forgot about that one. That one was really bad.
Yes, Cloaking Cars.
Ugh.
Yeah, that was not great.
What else is going on?
Anybody
into anything interesting? I made... We made beef and barley soup the other night. Short ribs.
Yeah, how was that?
Fucking awesome.
I had some good short ribs.
I love short ribs. You know, they're just... Cook them for a real long time, get the meat falling off.
Now, Gary, these short ribs I had would just fall off the bone. It was at this super swanky place in LA, but it's like, and someone else was paying, so I'm like, fuck it, I'll have that.
Hold on, did you go to Kraft or something?
No, I went to Soho House in LA, which is a private club for super exclusive Hollywood folk like myself.
Wow. I wouldn't have ever heard of that.
Yeah, oh. Well, you're not supposed to hear of it. We don't want people like you hearing about it.
Of course not. Did you wear your drug T-shirt there, or did you wear real clothes?
I think I was wearing a real shirt. I was wearing a plaid shirt.
Okay,
because when I go to these fine fancy places, I'm more like, what would Norm
that's
do?
Right, you got to look
WWND.
Approved.
Follow.
Now you are pro nugs. You have been pro nugs for a while.
Oh, do you want to hear my evil secret? I'm so ashamed of myself.
Are you peeling the crust off because they're carby?
I was staying at a hotel when I was down in LA recently, and when I go to LA, I don't stay in a fancy hotel. Because it's a waste of money. All I need is a place to crash.
Yeah.
So you're like the Motel 6?
Travelodge.
Okay.
Best Western. Whatever.
Someplace with free Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, the Best Western.
Someplace with free Wi-Fi.
The thing that I like is that on the cheap hotel, you get free Wi-Fi up until you get to about $120 a night, and then they start charging you again. So I'll stay at the Holiday Inn Express.
Anyway,
all day long.
This most recent one, I hadn't stayed in this neighborhood before, and I'm like, okay, I'm kind of hungry. I guess I'll go for a stroll and see what options are available.
Walking in LA? Peasant.
Some parts of LA are very nice to walk around.
Peasant.
West LA, down by the coast, Santa Monica, Venice. Okay, beautiful walking down there.
Tell your story.
So I'm walking down the street and I get one block and I see, very rare to see these, it always puts a smile on my face to see, a Wiener Schnitzel. I'm like, ah. But then I'm thinking, I'm still on low carb. I can't eat the bun. Maybe they can just give me a couple of wieners. But like that's
kind of. They put a wiener in another wiener?
That's kind of, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of lame. I'm like, I don't want to do that. Maybe this. It's hard to walk past a Wiener Schnitzel. I've never done that before, but okay, I'm going to do it.
I'm impressed.
Walk past, and what do I see coming over the horizon?
The arches.
Two tips of those majestic golden arches. I'm like, and the McRib
that's
was
the
out.
Worst heavenly music I've ever heard.
Oh, the McRib.
Heard.
That's right. I can't have the McRib. The McRib is terrible.
That sauce is nothing but sugar.
I love the McRib, but I passed it up as well. I did two things. And this is how good my diet strength has been. I walk past a fucking Wiener Schnitzel and turn down a McRib. That is diet discipline. Very, very impressed with myself.
I can't eat in a fast food restaurant anymore.
Yeah, I just
can't.
I occasionally will have a Burger King or a Wendy's, but it's very rare for me.
Huh. Anyway, I've been eating nugs lately because there is a place.
What's – no, you had to – nugs?
With
nuggets. Chicken McNuggets.
N-U-G. Chicken McNuggets. And there's a, I've been doing this job lately. I've been driving out into the North Bay a lot. And as I drive back, there's this McDonald's. It's right on my route back. That says 20 nugs, $4.99. I'm like, how can you say no to that value?
It's real easy.
By Grabthar's hammer. What a savings. So I pull off and I would get 20 nugs and Leah and I would have 10 each.
Gross.
And I'm the hero because I'm coming home with a box of nugs. It's just like caveman times. You come home with the day's kill.
How many carbohydrates would you guess are in a six-pack of nugs?
I know exactly how. I don't have to guess. You don't think I know this stuff?
How many?
I know how many are in 10 because I never eat less than 10.
Okay. How many are in 10?
It's 24, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about right.
Yeah.
That's all the carbs you eat for the day.
Only 24 grams can have up to carbs? I can have up to 100 grams of carbs.
10 nugs? That's nothing.
They make up for it in saturated fat.
Part of means nothing to me. The part of the reason why I eat the nugs is because they are one of the most low-carb foods on the menu. You'll actually get more carbs if you pick the wrong sauces. You've got to pick the right dipping sauces.
What sauces are the ones?
Well, you want to avoid barbecue, sweet and sour, honey mustard, anything that sounds sweet.
Yeah.
Ranch, buffalo, those are better for you.
Ranch is better for you? Ranch is the worst.
Because it's just fat.
There's no carbs in it.
Yeah, it's just fat. It's 2.61 grams of carbs per nug.
Yeah, so I would get – recently I've been getting the 20 for $4.99 because that's a crack.
Also, 48 calories, 3.01 grams of fat, and 2.49 grams of protein.
Only 40 calories per
chicken
nug.
Chicken sweepings.
High protein, high fat, low carb. Perfect food for me.
Gross.
So – I would get 20 nugs and I'd take them home and Leah would split them and she'd be very happy. So I go to the thing and they have the 20 nugs, but there's no Leah. I'm like, fuck, I better. I'm just going to have to do this myself.
Oh, no.
20 nugs.
Gross, dude.
And I did it like that without breaking
this
a sweat.
This is not – why are you proud?
I felt guilty afterwards.
Yeah, you should. You are smiling so
big
right now.
But it made me think that big 100 nugget challenge is maybe not that big a deal.
Oh, you fucking kidding me? You would die 60 nugs.
I did 20 like just boom without breaking a sweat.
That's how it all starts.
Gary, it's like running a marathon. The first 6 miles, no problem.
I still buy into that. I mean, we did a podcast marathon. We know when you were there, we were still in like, this is easy.
Yeah,
that was the last 4 hours.
You should have been there at 6 a.m. Grim.
By the way, the next time you do that,
yeah,
I'll commit to coming like one of the early morning shows.
Oh, okay, early. Yeah. We should do.
And that was actually one of the more interesting shifts. We had Patrick Norton come in the early shift, and
we needed it.
We were so punchy and out of it.
So Robbie Baldwin was there at like from like 12:30 until 3 probably, and then Patrick showed up. And Patrick, 3 a.m. doesn't affect Patrick Norton.
Patrick seems the same all the time.
Yeah, because again, he's like the Bear Grylls of tech. Right?
It was amazing. Like he came in with a giant box of donuts from Bob's over on Polk, which were awesome donuts.
Yeah.
And we just talked about the way shit used to be. And then driving, I don't remember.
He talked about his awesome iPhone case.
Yeah. My memories after about midnight are a little hazy.
I would actually have to go back.
Computer,
the amazing thing is I can go back and listen to those early morning podcasts and they're like new
to
me.
It's like content I've never heard before.
Yeah, I don't remember any of this stuff. I got a tweet today from someone saying, I really enjoyed your conversation about Footloose. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, when did we talk about Footloose?
Apparently we talked about Footloose for like 20 minutes.
Really?
No way.
In the 6 a.m. hour.
No,
just like
way.
The three of us. At 6 a.m. it would have been done because Patrick left at like 5:30.
It's in the lessons learned at 6 a.m. podcast.
Yeah, the lesson there is that we should start at like 10 o'clock in the morning and not noon because the amount of time we can minimize between the 2 hours before dawn and when we can finish. Like the less time that is, the better.
I'm
off
sure
we
there
are
many lessons that we can apply to next year's Octobercast.
Yeah, it was don't put your phone on the mic cord.
That's a good one.
That should be
number one.
Yeah. I blame Siri. I couldn't be held responsible for that.
So there's no fast – you're completely immune to fast food these days? Nothing – you won't grab a nugget or a no.
– I'll tell you. There's a thing that happens because I stopped eating McDonald's a long time ago.
I know you did. You never get tired of telling me that.
I know. I like to tell you. I'm cutting out other fast food.
You're like one of those guys that loves telling people they don't own a television. That makes you better than me somehow.
That makes me hipster.
Armadillo Willie's.
What's Armadillo Willie's?
It's a Texas barbecue place in South Bay.
Okay.
I fucking
But it's real food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a conversation with like two people about a television show and the fourth person's got to say, I don't watch television.
I haven't owned one.
If you don't watch television, you've got nothing to contribute, why don't you just fuck off? You don't have to tell me that you've got nothing to contribute. What's the point of that? It's like people on forums.
I don't watch television.
The people that come into forums and say, I have no interest in this. You just wasted your own fucking time telling me that.
It's true.
And these TV, I hate them. Anyway, that's all.
Maybe I have one in the closet somewhere.
Yeah, I don't watch television anymore.
I took the 19-inch away and put it in the garage 2 years ago. That's just a very San Francisco thing. Nowhere else in the country do you go and have people say, oh, I don't own a TV.
But the idea that any one medium is any more or less meritorious than the other. There's a lot of shit on television.
Just to be clear.
There's a lot of shit in the local bookstore
Sturgeon's
as well.
Sturgeon's Law.
What's Sturgeon's Law?
Well, somebody asked Theodore Sturgeon, who was a famous science fiction writer.
I know. I'm a big fan of his.
Isn't science most science fiction crap? He says, yeah, 90% of all science fiction is crap, but then 90% of everything is crap.
Yes.
Yeah, for every 12 episodes of Desperate Housewives.
Yes.
We have one episode of Breaking Bad.
Yes, 90% of everything is crap. That's how the 10% stands out. And it does.
I got a great tweet the other day. Speaking of Desperate Housewives, so it was like,
are you signing up for Desperate Housewives of Silicon Valley, Lloyd?
No.
Okay.
That's the Real Housewives.
Oh, Real Housewives. Right, sorry.
Good save.
I tweeted something about, I'm tired of vampires and zombies. I want a TV show, a series about succubi, right?
Yeah.
And somebody tweeted back, says, isn't that what The Real Housewives is?
That sounds right.
And I was like, oh, okay.
We were talking about Piers Morgan the other day, and I heard the best Stephen Fry quote. Because you know I hate Piers Morgan.
Yeah, and you love Stephen Fry.
Yeah, and I love Stephen Fry, and I can't believe I've never heard this quote.
They're at opposite ends of a spectrum, right? Fry's on one side. It's like the Fred Flintstone,
Stephen Fry was on some kind of panel game, and he was asked to give an alternative definition for the word countryside, and he said the act of killing Piers Morgan. Which I think was maybe the best definition I've ever heard of any word ever.
You just Vinnie Caravelle'd this podcast.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
Norm just got it.
No, that's amazing.
Norm got there in the end. It took a second.
Did the loop around.
But no, these people that are snobs about TV, there's amazing edification and things you can learn from watching TV. The same as you can if you read a book or go to the thing.
But the vast majority of it's garbage.
You just got to select the right. But again,
anything else.
That's true of anything.
Yeah.
No medium is inherently more worthy than any other, I don't think.
Impressionist art.
No, I just
I guess you're right. Yeah.
I don't.
It doesn't again.
My current guilty pleasure is Good Eats.
That's a great show.
Yeah. Good Eats isn't a guilty pleasure.
And that's what you shouldn't even be guilty about that. You learn tons of shit from that show.
I love the little interludes a lot better than the sort of the recipe stuff.
I like it. I like that it's you'll actually learn how to make. It's practical in that you'll learn how to make really interesting good food. But you'll also learn just a bunch of interesting shit.
Right.
Like, oh, I didn't know that's how water boils or something. You will learn it.
Well, that's what Alton Brown does.
Alton Brown's great. He doesn't do this. It's kind of a bummer he doesn't do the show anymore.
Well, he said he ran out of stuff to talk about. I appreciate that he walked away rather than just dragging it out.
At some point,
this podcast.
But it's for Good Eats is one of those things that whenever it's on, I'm like, yeah, I'll watch that. Cheesecake? Fine. Yeah, I'm going to learn a ton of shit about cheesecake, and including how to make a really good one. He did a whole episode that was just about mayonnaise. It was fucking fantastic.
It's an emulsion.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
And he also taught me, which I didn't know, that mayonnaise is basically the base for many other sauces. He's like, okay, now you made your mayonnaise, do this, boom. Now it's tartar sauce.
Well, that's
do this, boom. Now it's like a béarnaise sauce.
Put
it's amazing.
Some Thousand Island.
Yeah.
Put some ketchup in there. Secret sauce.
I didn't know that.
That's the way sauces all work, though. Like, even fancy French sauces, you make one and then you add something to it and that makes it a third, and you add some fat and that makes it a fourth. And,
yeah, it's great.
You know, it'll reduce it and then it becomes something else. And yeah, it's all that.
Mm. It's making me really hungry.
Yeah, I think we should go have some lunch. See you guys later. Thanks for listening. Back next Thursday. Yesterday. Oh, we didn't do a total for the chip in. Hold on.
Yeah, October cast.
Do we have a final number?
Yeah, it finished yesterday. I'm typing in my password.
You're on the live stream.
Were you able to keep it open for the extra days?
Yeah, I extended it through yesterday. It ended the total Octobercast haul. This is including the Whiskey Media Store and everything. $53,137.28. We had more than 2,000 contributors. Awesome. So that is amazing.
Wait, sorry, what was the final number?
$53,000.
Holy shit.
$137.28.
That's stunning. I'm very impressed by the generosity of our listeners.
That's amazing. Our listeners kick ass. And thanks everybody who contributed, whether you did
so
the
many
store,
dragons.
Whatever. Yeah, the dragons with the cars. I apologize for all the stuff that happened after midnight.
And also, how about this? Let's end the podcast on one really interesting statistic that just came out. This is breaking news. We didn't talk about Netflix today.
I'm just going to kill the recording right now so that we say the statistic and then
the lie, to black. If you'd have paid, you could have heard it. I'm actually surprised we didn't talk about Netflix this week because they've been in the news a lot this week.
Yeah, with their stock prices were big, of what it was.
Hemorrhaging
subscribers. And yet, at the same time, this is from The Hollywood Reporter. It just came out. Netflix accounted for 1/3 of all downstream internet traffic in September. Well, that's unbelievable.
The thought is that we've reached peak Netflix because Netflix is browning out internet access at homes during prime time when people go home from work and watch TV. They're firing up Breaking Bad or whatever on Netflix, and literally we're reaching capacity.
More people streaming HD video at any one time during peak hours than ever before.
Yeah, and what's happening is like shared nodes on cable systems, DSL providers upstream, small DSL providers upstream. Mike was telling me that he met with his ISP. They had like a town hall the other day, and it's a small municipal ISP that serves like 300 houses. So they all get together once in a while and see what's going on. Literally, he said that they are browning out the upstream, the downstream that they have because so many people are hitting Netflix.
So what's the solution? Just lay more pipe? What are they going to do?
Yeah, more
fiber.
Or charge more.
Get some of that fiber. Yeah. Oh, I was so bummed to hear. That was another thing we missed. Apparently, Verizon this week, the boss of Verizon was saying that they're done with rolling out Fios and everyone else is just going to get LTE and for their high-speed needs. And I'm like, oh, fuck.
Hold on. So they're saying instead of you having fiber to the door, we should use wireless?
Mm-hmm. Apparently.
Are you sure that's right?
If it's true, so much wrong with that that you can't even begin to start.
I think part of the reason why they love it is because
caps.
Net neutrality doesn't apply to wireless, so they're going to love that.
Also, they don't have to go through local like governments.
I'm just personally bummed because Fios is apparently pretty awesome and it's not available in my neighborhood. And if they're saying that they're done with the build out, it means I'm never getting it.
Well, can you get UVerse? It's fiber.
Why would you want that? Places. Shit.
Have you tested it?
Are you familiar with the company that provides that product?
I'm telling you that if you would like fiber in your house, Verizon doesn't offer fiber broadband in the Bay Area except for a couple of places in the East Bay.
UVerse isn't fiber, is it? It's just your existing phone line.
Can be. It's fiber to
I have a friend who switched to UVerse. He lasted about a week and switched back and said it was the worst week of his life in terms of any experience.
Well,
he's
the
ever
TV
had.
Side is supposed to be really gnarly, but the internet's pretty fast by
Well, in my neighborhood, what you get if you sign up for UVerse is old school DSL.
Oh, see, that's not what you want. You have to make sure you have the high speed stuff.
That's the thing. They would need to get that. I would consider the next time I move house, I would, again, the same way that I look at Wi-Fi in a hotel, I'm going to be looking at, am I in a Fios area? Like, what kind of service am I going to be able to get? You got to look at this stuff.
I'm still happy with my 25 down, 8 up.
Yeah, well, you're on Comcast Business, right?
That's what I get. I did a speed test last night because Netflix was being kind of janky, and it turned out it was just the Apple TV. We switched to Xbox, and it was fine. But I ran a quick speed test. I was getting 24 down and something like 8 up. We actually had a Comcast person come to our house because we had internet go down recently and they wanted to check the line. And she looked at the speed. She was like, I don't even know how you're getting those speeds. I'm like, well, don't tell anyone. You know, when you got a good thing going, you don't want to let people
not
know.
Not having a cap is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, and also getting the fast repair when stuff comes out. I switched to business after I had all those problems.
In fact, that's what happened. We were starting to have dropouts. And what's going on? You know, the net was going dark for like 5 minutes at a time and stuff like that. And restarting the router and the
I had that for weekends at a time. It was horrible.
So I called them and they sent a guy out. I said, you know, expecting a week later. I says, well, how about we send him out this afternoon? I kind of had to look at my phone for a second, right?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, sure, that's fine. And he comes out and it turned out that the Comcast cable TV guys had put a filter on the line because they didn't want me to get basic cable, right?
Yeah.
And the guy looks at it and says, nobody gets basic cable. And he rips the thing off. He says, these things go bad for a while. And he kind of links the thing together and it's been great since.
Fantastic.
But it was great. So, you know who gets basic cable? Nobody. That was actually the way you put it.
Comcastic.
The other thing I've noticed is that if you complain about things on Twitter and you've got a few followers, you will get better service these days.
I feel bad doing that. I
complained about my Comcast service and the Comcast guy on the phone wouldn't help me. I complained about it on Twitter. I get someone from Comcast Twitter division has a guy phone me back saying, maybe there's something we can do.
The Comcast bill guy responds to everybody, just to be clear.
Yeah, but
a team of experts.
Right, but I'm saying that Comcast actually called me back saying our internet division has called us back saying responding to some tweet you made and we need to help you more.
Oh, I never get that, but I had some
Leah couldn't get
Comcast.
Leah couldn't get her text plan changed on AT&T. I retweeted her complaint about it on Twitter and put it on Google+. Next thing you know, all these AT&T people are coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, I can do something for you. Squeaky wheel.
Must be nice,
squeaky
Gary.
Wheel. Well, you've got twice as many followers as me. You should know how nice it is.
Yeah, I always feel really bad when I complain about
something. Again, it's because you think you're the other Will Smith. Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, there is that. The profile is clear. Anyway, I'm cutting this podcast. We've gone on too long. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.